Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Weekend is mercifully over, and a holiday week is upon us. This will be, of course, a shortened week. I mean, I try to get behind the microphone whenever I can, but we will not be here Thursday or Friday, as we will be observing the Thanksgiving holiday. But we will make a point of trying to observe it in such a way that I let the kids know, among other things, that yeah, what the real history of Thanksgiving is. And by the way, for later, not now, but for later, if you wish, I really have to recommend to you a little something over at Crooks and Liars. You know Crooks and Liars, just like it sounds. Scroll down, it's fairly near the top right now. Scroll down until you find Kids Reenact the First Thanksgiving. It's charming. I mean, really charming. And much closer to any kind of truth than I would say most of the kids of the age of those in this particular video will ever learn way up into their adulthood about the realities of the conquest of this continent. Conquest? Conquest? Theft. Come on. Conquest, it makes it sound like there was some... No. Theft. It's too video for the audio to be much good. But really, you do owe it to yourself. It is precious, past precious. So have a run over to crooksandliars.com and check out Kids Reenact the First Thanksgiving. Yeah. So even though it's a foreshortened week, or is it foreshortened? No, it's just a shortened week. And to foreshorten it would be mean that I wasn't here right now, but I am. Even though it's a shortened week, we've got 3 days of great conversation coming up. And I think we're going to have just a Jim Dandy good time this evening because it's the first day of the week. And, well, things just develop this way, don't they? And that means it... Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up. You will not believe your eyes. No one will be admitted to the tent after the first 5 minutes. It is Moran Monday. Morans, Morans, Morans. Morans all over the place. More Morans than you knew actually existed and gathered together under one roof. Come and see the Morans. Come and see the right-wing teabaggers. Yeah, it's Moran Monday. Wow, did I mail that intro in or what? No, not really. I mean, it doesn't deserve anything better. Because these freaks don't deserve anything better. Yeah, I've had an email correspondence going on with Reverbo over the weekend, where we've been just sort of, enjoying Gary Larson cartoons past. And as Reverbo noted, no one quite painted the Moran. Okay, so he didn't paint. No one quite drew the Moran like Gary Larson did. And you know, just go look for Gary Larson stuff. You'll find the Morans and you'll know when you see them. Because they're unmistakable. You know what I mean? But it is Moran Monday, and we have lots of Morans on the agenda for you. But I want to start, and please, everybody, okay, those of you who hate sports, don't go, oh no, he's talking about sports, that's not liberal enough, now I have to leave. No, stay put, please. Because the head table of the Morans is usually reserved for right wing mouth breathers and knuckle walkers and freaks of all form who come from the political arena. That's usually who's at the head table on Moran Monday. Not this time, however. Not this time. No, this time. Well, you remember a few weeks back when, oh, what was it? Bob Greasy said that Juan Pablo Montoya, the Colombian race driver, was out getting a taco or something instead of being at a press conference or something, you know, talking to important people like him. That was pretty stupid. It wasn't racist, it was bigoted. But never mind, that may be a distinction without a difference. I've got some fresh Moran for you, though, from the sporting world. And, of course, it comes from Fox. Over on cable, there's something called the Fox Sports Prime Ticket. And it's a cable network. And they control the announcers for various and sundry NBA franchises, including, but one supposes not limited to, the Los Angeles Clippers. Have you seen this one? This is just precious. The announcer for the Los Angeles Clippers is Ralph Lawler, and the analyst, otherwise known as the color guy, who works alongside him, is a person by the name of Michael Smith. They recently were, you know, doing their shtick, covering a game. It was the Los Angeles Clippers versus, where are they? Well, it doesn't much matter. It was a Clippers game. You know how that goes. I mean, there are long-suffering losing franchises out there, and the paradigm has been long since been the Clippers. I mean, they've had their little flashes, but yeah, come on, it's the Clippers. I mean, the empty seats. Oh, the empty seats. I'm sure that these guys could be heard across the court doing their little the broadcast pattern. But anyway, there is playing in the NBA a man by the name, the Memphis Grizzlies is who they were playing. Went right by it. Memphis Grizzlies player by the name of Hamed Haddadi is Iranian. Okay? With me so far? Of course you are. Let's let this speak for itself. This is just too precious not to.
Hamed Haddadi?
Yeah.
Where's he from?
He's the first Iranian to play in the NBA.
There aren't any Iranian players in the NBA.
He's the only one.
He's from Iran?
I guess so.
I mean, that Iran?
Yes.
And the real Iran?
Yes.
Wow. Well, Haddadi. That's Haddadi.
I'm sure it's not Borat's older brother.
Well, Tinsley is back. Gay goes out.
If we make a movie about Haddadi, I'm going to get Sacha Baron Cohen to play the part.
Well, Gay had quite a second half with 21 points in the half, getting the greeting from the happy head coach Lionel Hollins. Here's Haddadi. Nice little backdoor pass.
Look at the pass.
Well, I guess those Iranians can pass the ball.
Especially the post players. I don't know about their guards.
Minute remaining in the game, 104-89.
Little flare screen for Ricky. He's still hot.
Nice feed. Davis to Craig Smith.
Probably should have started Ricky Davis and Craig Smith.
No. We'll see what happens on Friday.
Yeah, we'll see what happens on Friday. Okay, I guess this is our first movie reference of the evening, coming at 10 minutes and 43 seconds, 45 past the hour. Do you remember the doddering, boozed-up announcer played by Bob Uecker in the movie? And it was cute enough for what it was. Major Leagues, the first one, where he's just sitting there through the game, pouring tumblers full of Jim Beam or whatever. That's got to be a little bit like what it is when you're the Clippers guy. I mean, there's just not... Every day's a mail-in because, well, you know, the Clippers are mailing in too. But it's that exchange about Haddadi. Are you sure that's not Borat's older brother? If they ever make a movie about Haddadi, I'm going to get Sacha Baron Cohen to play the part. Here's Haddadi, nice little backdoor pass. Look at that pass! I guess those Iranians can pass the ball! One only wonders what he says when they play, when Yao Ming is on the court. How about that? All Chinese people aren't short! That Yao Ming sure can dunk the ball! But there's a happy ending to the story, I suppose. Because these two clowns were at least suspended. Fox issued an apology. We regret the remarks made by Clippers announcers Michael Smith and Ralph Lawler during Wednesday's telecast. While we believe that Michael and Ralph did not intend their exchange to be offensive... You gotta love a sentence like that. Believe and intend. In retrospect, the comments were inappropriate. In retrospect? No! No, they were inappropriate in the present tense, too! It's not just when you look back at them that they're offensive. In retrospect, the comments were inappropriate. We extend our apologies to Hamed Haddadi of the Memphis Grizzlies and to anyone who was offended. We have addressed this situation with Michael and Ralph and have taken appropriate action. I think they took the scotch bottle away. I mean, like I said, it's the Clippers. The National Iranian American Council is still working to make sure that the apology is read on air. I mean, it's 2010! When did Dr. Naismith invent basketball? I mean, God... You know, hung a peach basket on a board somewhere in Springfield, Massachusetts or something like that, right? I mean, isn't that the myth of the, maybe it's real, who knows? I guess those Iranians can pass the ball. How about that, Ralph? They're not all bomb-throwing jihadis. Some of them have a pretty nice first step to the basket. Meet 1810. 1810, 2010. I think you'll have a lot in common. You know, I imagine this guy's pretty popular back home. I don't know. I don't know if the games are allowed to be broadcast in Iran, but I'll bet you there's a handful of folks who follow the box scores to see what Hamed Haddadi is doing. Because see, he's reached the big time. He's in the NBA. He's transcended. He's transcended the basketball world, and now he plays in a league where they don't even have, a traveling foul, where you can run from one end of the court to the other end of the court with the ball in your hands and maybe bounce it once. You know, where your leap to the basket for the big slam can start at half court, and it's sort of, I don't know, I never did get in track and field. I never did get the triple jump. It was sort of like a hop and a skip and a fly and a twist and but that's the NBA. Unless it's a total blowout, whoever has the ball at the end of the game wins. Whoever shoots last wins. I mean, I'm not an NBA guy. But I am an inclusiveness guy. But this displays a sort of, and you can see it on any given sports broadcast. Sports broadcasting, with the exception of Keith Olbermann's presence on Football Night in America on NBC, is largely dominated by a bunch of right-wing hacks. Now, that's not to say the same of the sports writers. Sports writers are better than sports broadcasters generally, because they have a craft that in which they have to appeal to the actual minds of people. But this is just astonishing. I mean, I should not be shocked. You shouldn't be shocked. I mean, for Christ's sakes, it's Fox, right? I mean, we're lucky that Lawler and Smith weren't. I wonder how many times he was waterboarded by the Department of Homeland Security before he was allowed to post up. But it's also encouraging that there was an apology, even though it had elements of the non-apology about it. We apologize if anyone was offended. We extend our apologies to anyone who was offended. So it really is. It's a non-apology apology. Because while we believe that Michael and Ralph did not intend their exchange to be offensive, see, what you believe and what they did or did not intend. So, under the same circumstances, if they had used some epithet for an African-American player, would Fox still have said, well, we don't believe they intended using that word to be offensive? You see, is it just, I don't know. Am I wrong on this? Or is that just a little bit, oh, no, it's a lot sickening, isn't it? Our second story of Moran Monday comes from, well, there's no story, there's no link about this. This is just something that happened while I was trying to enjoy a sporting Saturday watching college football. Because that's what we do on a Saturday. That's what I do on a Saturday. Enjoy it. And so there I was, trying to watch Ohio State and Michigan, watching Rich Rodriguez sweat right through his brand new plugs in his scalp. Oh, that was Caddy Bob. And of course, if you're familiar with the process at all, you know there's a sideline reporter. In this case, it was sideline reporter Holly Rowe is on the sidelines now to tell us about the new Buckeye uniforms. And lo and behold, there she is, Holly Rowe, standing down on the sidelines at Michigan Stadium. The big house. It's the delight. One of the things about sports on Saturday is the delightful conjoining of cliche after cliche after cliche. But Holly Rowe was there to fill up a few minutes with talk about the new Buckeyes uniforms. They were wearing kind of a throwback thing with a white helmet with the numbers on it. But they were wearing the high-tech new Nike pants, right? Yeah. And the pants were, I don't know, it was like there was some sort of high-tech computer printing process on them, because the pants looked like they were kind of fuzzed out. It had this fuzzed out effect with the stripes down the sides of the pants that looked like, you know, maybe the camera wasn't completely in focus. I suppose it's all very hip, and the people at Nike are just terribly, terribly, terribly proud of themselves. And so she talked about the weight of the uniform, and she showed the undergirdle. And way back in the day, you know, you had hip pads and a butt pad and thigh pads and all of that stuff. And they were all individual component pieces, and they had to be slipped into pockets or snapped onto waistbands, that kind of thing. Right. Well, no more. Now, instead, the pads are integrated in the undergarment, and they're really, really cool looking, and they're, you know, light space age fibers, and they're built right into the girdle, and I'm sure the girdle costs more than the individual pads themselves, so it's a big corporate win for Nike, because if one pad goes bad, you have to ditch the whole girdle and buy a whole other girdle, and you see what I'm talking about. And we're talking about, yes, we're talking about, you know, fleet-footed wide receivers, and we're talking about quick-moving tailbacks and the like, or maybe a running quarterback or somebody, you know, that kind of thing. And when we're talking about people who carry the football, we're talking about people whose speeds are measured in the 40-yard dash. Oh, my God, Bill, he runs a 3.940. Not yet, but you get my meaning. But then there are the great big 350-pound fellers. And those 350-pounders, they don't get timed with a stopwatch so much as a sundial. I mean, they can be pretty quick, but not 4.440 quick. So why all this? Well, toward the end of the piece, and I dropped a note to David in Tennessee when I watched it, because college football fans. And I said, oh my God, I can't believe what I just saw. Because prattling Holly Rowe on the sidelines said, and guys, the folks at Nike realize this is the belt buckle to the new pants. And the guys at Nike realized that the single biggest weight component on the pants was the D-ring belt buckle. So, guys, do you know what Nike did? That belt buckle was made of steel. But Nike re-engineered and redesigned the pants so that the belt buckle would be made of titanium, thereby making the pants lighter. And, you know, when I sit down for college football on Saturday, I gotta admit, I'm trying to sort of, I'm putting politics to one side, I'm trying to enjoy a few hours out of the swamp, you know, just watch the ball and enjoy it and forget about the fact that this is basically unpaid slave labor. Don't get me started. But I realize at this point that I cannot divorce myself I can't divorce myself from my world. And what I mean by that is, because of where we live, I recognize the horrors that are inherent in the extractive process. Is a price that, and titanium's not cheap. And the people who live near titanium extraction sites live hellish lives. I mean, okay. Titanium in Africa. Simple statement. Titanium mining in Africa has been beset by environmental problems due to the polluting nature of processing rutile, R-U-T-I-L-E, a principal titanium ore. Titanium production in Africa includes the following principal countries and companies. Tioman Resources of Canada in Kenya, Tioman Kenya. In Mozambique, it's Kenmare Resources PLC of Ireland. In Sierra Leone, it is Sierra Rutile of Ohio since 1967. In South Africa, it's BHP Billiton, Anglo-American, Richards Bay Minerals, Kumba Resources. Oh, there's big money in titanium. Now, rutile is a mineral composed primarily of titanium dioxide, TiO2. And it's a bit of a booger to get at. You know, we need titanium for things like fighter jets that we build so we can go and bomb brown people. I think titanium is used, it's a really hard, light metal. It's used in the medical, like, you know, when granddad needs a new hip, he gets a titanium hip, right? Um, 23% of the world's annual rutile supply. And I've got no pronouncer on it, so I'm guessing. Sierra Leone went up to about 30% in 2008. There were about 19 years of reserves, estimated at 259 million metric tons. And, of course, as like I said, with any extractive process, there will be environmental hazards. And generally, minerals are not extracted near where the people who own the mineral extraction companies live. There are photographs you can find. Just look up titanium mining or something like that. And, yeah, it's a big old open, scarred pit in the earth. And putting one in usually splits neighbor against neighbor. Where have we heard that before? And it's not a good thing. But lo and behold, the Nike Corporation has decided that in the name of shaving one trillionth of a second off of some tailback's 40 speed, that they will shift from a steel D-ring buckle in the pants to a titanium one. And maybe this is more proof of me being overly sensitive than it is proof of Nike's senseless consumption. But I was horrified by that, and I thought, God, we really do. We just waste the resources of the planet for the sake of wasting it. I mean, come on, it's a steel D-ring. Okay, so it's 2 ounces. So you shaved off an ounce. But here's the secondary thing. Somewhere out there, there is a Nike corporate flak who is probably hailing it as a green choice. Want to bet me? Because, well, you know, by shifting from steel D-rings to titanium D-rings in the football pants, that has cut down our shipping by 1.35 ounces per pair of pants shipped. Now, when you're shipping pants for an entire football team, that adds up quickly. And so we know that our carbon footprint has been reduced and we have saved thus much fuel. Right? But then we have to ask the all-important question, where were the high-tech football pants with the titanium D-ring belt buckle made? Oh, sure, I'm sure some prototypes are made in the test kitchens of Nike up in Oregon somewhere. But once they standardize the process, don't think for an instant that it isn't offshore to some poor godforsaken soul who's chained to a table in the People's Republic of China. Or maybe it's Vietnam. Or maybe it's Cambodia. Or maybe it's Sierra Leone, because I'm told that we do not pronounce the E in Sierra Leone. No. And so wherever it is, the pants have to go from there to Columbus, or Ann Arbor, or Tuscaloosa, or State College, Pennsylvania, or Morgantown, West Virginia, or wherever the Nike customer college football program is. And of course, you can also well imagine the athletic director out there glad handing the boosters. Well, you know, we're going to need it. We're going to need another one of those big checks that you write us every year, because we can't win unless we have the new Nike pro combat football uniforms with the titanium D-ring pants. Well, anything for alma mater. Let me get out checkbook here. How much you reckon you'll need? You figure you can name a textbook after me or something? It's done. You know, it's all this downhill trickle that starts with poor people on an island somewhere who are having their once beautiful little chunk of paradise turned into a seething, festering, toxic waste dump, so that a kid in Columbus can have a titanium D-ring belt buckle on his Nike Pro Combat football pants. Sorry. And I'm sorry. Holly Rose, a moron. We're talking here about the ABC and ESPN. Was it Holly Rowe? Maybe. Yeah, but, it was one of the babblers on the sidelines. Hey, tell me, Coach, why'd your team suck today? Well, you know, football's a game of inches, and we just didn't execute, and you can't expect to win the ball game when you keep giving the ball back to the other team. And, well, there's 11 people on either side, and the ball's shaped funny. It's not round, you know. It bounces strange. Thanks, Coach! And so that game was ruined for me. Because I couldn't shake the titanium mine. out of the football game. Just couldn't. In regard to one proposed titanium mine, from August the 25th, 2008, the multi-million Rand titanium mining project being planned for the Wild Coast has divided the nearby Zolabeni village down the middle. Now neighbors who once lived in peace and harmony no longer talk to one another because they belong to one of two opposing factions, for or against the mining. The situation is so bad that police are conducting daily patrols in the volatile northern Pondoland area where the village chief Nkosi Baleni Ndakabazeke was assaulted 2 weeks ago for supporting the mining. The chief has since fled to an unknown location in KwaZulu-Natal. This is, of course, Africa. The assault took place in the same day that Minerals and Energy Minister Buelwa Sonjika was in the village to announce progress with the controversial mining project. In June this year, Sonjika awarded titanium mining rights to Australian company Mineral Commodities despite strong objections from some of the villagers and environmentalists. There we go, calling people who object to having human beings' lives ruined environmentalists. They're human rights workers, damn it. When the Daily Dispatch visited the village last week, an eerie silence hung over the area, and it was clear that the villagers felt uneasy, talking openly about the mining project as a result of the divisions. They will definitely have to kill us first before they can start any mining activities on the land of our forefathers, said Muthanjelwa Mpothelwa, who is an advisor at Amadiba Traditional Authority. Mpothelwa, along with several other villagers, has accused the government of imposing the mining on them. Well, would this be any different? Would there be a dime's worth of difference in this if instead of Mineral Commodities of Australia, it said Massey Energy of the United States? Not much. Just another case of the people who live there not having a say-so in what gets done with where they live. And it's sickening. It is absolutely sickening. People who for generations have worked together to sustain their own communities, now divided and not speaking to one another, because one side of that debate says, yeah, but we need the money. And the other side of the debate saying, what are you going to put on the money to taste good, make it taste good, when we can't get a living out of the ground that has supported us for a million years? Meanwhile, the tailback in Columbus is saying, Coach, I'm feeling faster already with my titanium belt buckle. That's right, son. You are faster. I think this may up your draft possibilities by about two notches in the 15th round. Jesus, Mary, and Joseph. So that's where Moran Monday begins this evening. Maybe you've got some Moran nominations for us. If you do, jump right in. I think it would be, I'm sure you've. It's not like there's a scarcity of Morans. They're all over the place. I'm sure I missed a few, but I have found several. The war on Christmas is officially underway. Only problem is the geniuses at the American Family Association kind of missed. Just kind of jumped out there and did their thing before they had all their facts. But since when have facts mattered? Since when have facts mattered to right-wing religion industry fundamentalists, hey? It is the 23rd day of November. Spent some time yesterday reflecting on what the 22nd of November means. And it means a lot. The more I reflect, the more it means. The older I get, the more it means. Maybe we'll talk about that too. But it's also the 23rd day of November, and we still haven't crossed the $1,000 barrier for November, which is making December look awfully grim. Thanks to those of you who are chipping in and helping out. It is manifestly appreciated. It just gets a little bit scary this time of the month when I realize that we've got to get through the next one on what we've pulled in this one. The PayPal button there is there for your use, should you be able to. Head on RadioNetwork.com. There's a support button. You can use PayPal or snail mail, either way. And you can also get involved with the program. The minute that the mood strikes you, the spirit moves you. 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your nickel, 304-658-3333. Truly, we are America's listener-supported liberal voice. We are the horn. Could resist. Fee Waybill and the Tubes. Just seemed incredibly appropriate. And, of course, if you recall it, one of the great early 80s videos, too. Lots of email in about Sierra Leone. Gee, pardon me, I get my Sergio and my Sierra confused. One directed spaghetti westerns and the other one is an island. Never mind. Marty also reminds me that... The titanium ball bats? Yeah, they are also used in ultra-high-tech baseball and softball bats, so line drives can go back through the box and maybe kill somebody. Yeah. Jesus. I think what undergirds my frustration here is the fact that we are at this point in permanent grasshopper mode, and winter is never going to come. And so we can just consume, and I don't know, you tell me, at the bottom of this, is there some sort of, is this the work of religious fundamentalism? Creating this notion that we have an unlimited supply of everything, and that there are just little elves in the middle of the earth cranking out more titanium ore, cranking out more coal, making more oil. Because that's the way the religious fundamentalists, I hesitate to use the word think, but think. No, that's the way they believe. And so we can just use all the titanium for baseball bats and belt buckles and we'll never, you know, and one of these days Granddad'll need a hip and I'm sorry, the titanium's all gone. We can give him one made out of iron. Still got lots of iron. We just shipped a big boatload of coal over to, over to China last week, and they're cranking out iron hip joints, several thousand a day. That's what the college kids who were wearing the titanium belt buckle pants are going to be getting after their football careers are over and their hips are shot. Consume. And did you see, by the way, that Jamie Dimon of JP Morgan Chase, or one of those rapacious bastards on Wall Street? Maybe the next big financial wizard guru honcho to go into the Obama administration. Yeah, I know. One of these days, it would be nice to have one of the real smart guys. You know, a Krugman or. The other guy. Why can't I remember his name? My bad. But there are smart economic guys who aren't on Wall Street. In fact, I think the dumb economic guys are probably the ones on Wall Street. They're just good at stealing stuff. But again, yeah, let's put another one of those consume guys in it. Yeesh. Another McCree. To the phones we go. Hey, Juanita.
I don't know if this person would be considered to be a moron or not because they know everything there is to know. But I saw a new blonde, right winger.
Yeah.
On MSNBC News. You ever heard of Nancy Fulton?
No. Never. No. Do we have a new attack blonde?
Huh?
Do we have a new attack blonde?
Wow. Do we ever. She looks like she might have been a model, you know. She's got a real long neck, you know. She's a nice looking, but boy, is she snide. And everything that was said, you know, about our side, you know, it was like...
where she can barely begin to contemplate the stupidity of it all. Yeah,
people that don't know anything. But that's the way it sounded. I wrote it down the way it sounded. She's Faulkner. Nancy Faulkner. I thought, where do these people keep popping up from?
Were there any hyphens involved? I mean,
I don't know how it's spelled. I mean, I spell it the way they, you know, it sounded to me.
Right. Faulkner.
You know, didn't have it printed out or anything.
But. Well, I'll have a link in my email box about her in any minute now, so all questions will be answered.
But anyway, and do you know the new dead of the night, what time the new dead of the night is?
No.
8 p.m. Eastern Standard, Eastern, whatever we've got now. We got daylight or Eastern?
No, we're in Standard time now.
Yeah, I get it mixed up. Yeah. Democrats voted in the dead of the night.
I'll be darned. The dead.
8 o'clock.
You know, you know who coined that phrase, right, Juanita?
No.
That was Shakespeare. Shakespeare was the one who, or maybe it was already in use, but that's where it comes into. And I forget which play it is, but in the dead, in the dead still of the night, or some such as that. And that's where. Right. So 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time is now, according to Republicans, the dead of the night.
Right.
Zombies coming out of graves. Everything. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'll be darned.
Two in the West Coast? 2 p.m. in the West Coast. That's the dead of the night.
Dead of the, yeah, 8, 9, yeah, that would be 5 o'clock on the West Coast, yeah. Mm-hmm. Dead of the night.
I couldn't remember everything else they've been saying, but that's one of the things they said. Because they're going to fight it.
Is that when they were cramming this bill down the Republicans' throats like
a dead
fish?
Yeah. And they didn't even get to have any part of it. I believe that was one of the things Nancy had to say, and the person representing our side said that, he had watched a lot. No, it was actually one of the announcers said, well, I've watched a lot of the shows where Republicans were there. They were offering their amendments and so forth. So.
Yeah, what we didn't get to participate means in Republican speak is we didn't get to control.
Right.
Yeah.
But they're coming out with a bunch of stuff, and like I said, I remember that one specifically, that it was voted on in the dead of the night. And if nobody watches it, how do they know? They don't know any different.
Sure, that means that it was voted on. Never mind the fact that they have done things in the dead stock still of the night.
They've done it.
Do you remember Medicare Part D?
Oh, yeah.
And that was happening at what, midnight, 1 a.m.?
Threatening people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice guys.
Yeah. Well, that's what they got at the dead of the night. But and they're talking about it like it's already a done deal. And, of course, you got to... what's that lovely man's name? Ran for vice president. Lieberman.
Oh, Lieberman? Yes.
Oh, he can't have it if it's got that.
Oh, right. Well, did you catch the? I guess somebody caught him on it with a video camera or some such, and asked him. Well, they said, you know, Rachel Maddow's been wanting to discuss this with you for a long time.
Yeah.
Will you not go on her show and at least talk to her about it? And his answer was just precious. No, I don't think I will. She has a point of view.
She has a point of view.
She has a point of view.
Yeah, I'll play the audio. You may think I'm making it up, Juanita, but I'm not.
No, I don't.
She has
not
a point
him.
Of view.
Joe can't participate in a discussion with someone who has a point of view.
Yeah.
What that really means is Joe can't participate in a discussion with someone who has a point of view that is not bought and paid for by the healthcare industry.
Yeah, right.
Now, I can't go on there. She has a point of view. And I can't be sure that she hasn't already been bribed by those liberal communists.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Don't forget the fascists. The fascist communists.
The fascist communists, exactly.
Yeah.
Or the communo-fascists.
Yeah, one or the other.
From the Weimar Republic.
Yeah.
Did you catch Glenn Beck with his lecture about the Weimar Republic, Juanita?
No, I can't take it.
Okay, yeah. We've all got a threshold.
I know. He gives my threshold fast, I mean.
He gives my threshold the Fantods.
Oh, gosh. Oh, he's got it all explained, huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he was caught, he was caught on a cell phone video, I guess, down your way somewhere, down in the great state of Florida. Explaining, laying it right out. We're just like the Weimar Republic. And they gave up their liberties and they monetized their debt. And the next thing you know, Hitler. Next thing you know, Obama. Same.
Mm-hmm. He just cares about this country so much.
He loves it. Where's my Vicks Vapor Rub? I can't get the tears out.
Yep. Well,
yeah.
Sarah Palin's got them all out.
Oh, well, but her book sales aren't.
Publicized or whatever.
Right, but her book sales aren't quite what they were hoped to be there at Fort Hood.
At Fort Hood?
Yeah, not Fort Hood, Fort Bragg, that's where she is.
Yeah, I think she is going to Fort Hood, too.
If there's an opportunity to sort of ride on the backs of the dead, why, wouldn't you expect it?
Yeah. Well, they said there was like 1,300 people lined up there at Fort Bragg.
Charming.
Yeah. Well, listen,
I was going to tell you, by the way, the teabaggers are now laughing at dead people in town hall meetings. Did you know this?
Oh, Lord, what?
Yeah, this latest one took place in Illinois, where a woman stood up to speak and tell about her daughter-in-law who was uninsured and recently died of pneumonia. And her in-utero baby died with her. The teabaggers in attendance hooted and hollered.
Oh, boy.
Classy bunch.
Mm. I'll tell you. And you got Cheney come out again criticizing Obama.
You mean Mary?
Anew.
Yeah.
No, him.
Oh, him?
Yeah.
Because I've got, she's actually.
I heard it on the show,
She's actually one of the morons for this week, because she showed up on, this week with George Snuffleupagus.
Yeah.
And, I guess accused Obama of dithering some more. But you know what? I think she is turning into Dick Cheney before our very eyes, because she's, a catty moment, but I think she's wearing one of Dick's own old guy gray cardigan sweaters in this thing.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Yeah, he's come out with a new one, and I heard it on some show. I'm playing it. And what did they say about him that he sounded, I forget now what they said, something about him.
Bitter? I don't know.
There's some on MSNBC that are, you know.
Well, what I don't understand is when
things for our side, but I can't stand Joe. That Joe guy, you know, the one from Tallahassee.
Yeah, that's Scarborough.
I just avoid that show.
Like the plague, yeah.
But they've got some other people on there that are pretty good. That Nora O'Donnell, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
She went to that first book signing of Sarah's, the first one, and she was interviewing people, and she interviewed this young woman and another guy, and a guy, and, you know, probably in his 30s or maybe early 40s. Anyway, of course, you know, they thought Sarah was wonderful, and she brought up about that, you know, Sarah was for the bailout. Oh, no, not her. No. And then Glenn Beck said that Nora was picking on a teenager, and she was a grown woman, you know.
Well, but in Glenn Beck's sick fantasy world, she's a teenager. In Glenn Beck's sick fantasy world, she's probably 9 years old.
Well, in his lying, in all of his lies, you know, he doesn't care how, you know. He doesn't, you know, that's the way it's going to be with the people that believe him. They're just going to believe whatever he says. Right?
Right, and facts will not get in the way.
No.
You know, it's just like the Fox press release. We do not believe they intended it to be disparaging. How can you compare a human being to Borat? And not that, you know, oh, we compared him to Borat, but in a good way.
Oh, yeah?
You know, the...
Well, I want to ask you a question. Do you know if Kevin's moved to Czechoslovakia yet?
Heard
him in a while.
I think he was going to Jamaica.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. Maybe he did go. Maybe. Well, no, you're right. I recall that he was talking about the Czech Republic, too.
It's going to be pretty quick.
I haven't heard from him in a while, but you've probably conjured him now.
I hope so.
Juanita, you have a good evening.
You too.
All right. We'll talk to you soon. And be careful what happens in the dead of the night now.
I know. Okay.
That could be any time after the sun goes down.
Right. Or in the west in the afternoon.
That's entirely true. Take care.
Yeah.
I know. Bye now.
Okay. Or tomorrow in the other part of the world. That's, or yesterday,
it could be with your morning toast.
Yeah. Okay, well, night.
Bye now. In the dead still of the night, which in some parts is still the broad afternoon. You know how that goes. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, is this Garrett?
Yep.
Hey, what's up?
Well, this week's Moran has to be Mitch McConnell, because on Saturday night or Sunday, just after the AP story I read, after... They decided, well, we're not going to filibuster the decision to debate the bill. He was quoted, the article I've read, he was like quoted as saying some gibberish about how people were actually didn't want this, you know, this reform that the Democrats are trying to push through.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I understand he's Mitch the Turtle Man. He's got, you know, he lies like there's no tomorrow. But that just struck me as particularly moronic.
And that's true. And yeah, a man without a chin. Yes.
Yes. And I mean, and the honorable mention is Les Miles.
Oh well, yeah, okay. That may be lost on the non sports following folks, but
yeah, I know. You found the real doozies. I mean, those, especially those Clipper announcers. I mean, that almost beat the whole Texas legislature in their pretty much striking down marriage in Texas. I mean, that almost beats that for just pure just. What were you thinking?
And that's, you know, that's a story that keeps on giving, because they keep denying that they did that. But the problem with Texas is that they're up against the plain language that they wrote.
Yeah, I mean, everybody's done it. Everybody has quoted it everywhere. I mean, and it's just like, you know, it's clear as day. You worded it wrong. Under the law, marriage is no longer legal in the state of Texas.
And wasn't there an old movie out there, Garrett? Maybe it was trying to think. Maybe it was that old classic Father Wore Tights. And it's not as kinky as it sounds. Where there was a decision at some point that they weren't actually married, and it was all set in Victorian times, and the children were all just absolutely beset with grief because of the fact that they had been illegitimized. because they weren't married in the eyes of the church, or maybe it was because, you know, father was not a Christian. Very funny movie.
That sounds so familiar. That almost sounds like, yeah, that sounds familiar. Actually, it's kind of almost a cliche, the whole, you know, find out the marriage is, you know, annulled because some technical error in, oh no, you know. I know that it's been done in comedy a couple of times, you know, probably not as good as the first time they did it, but, you know, but it's not, and it's something I've heard of before.
But that's the entire state of Texas now.
Yeah.
Even Pastor Hagee.
I mean, yeah. Come to think of it, that's best with somebody as crazy as Hagee. But yeah, I mean, you know, it's like a bad sitcom. I mean, you know,
it would be fun to be, I don't know, maybe this is one of those I envy horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner moments, because he's got real live honest to God wingnut Texans to play with, and he can, by the way, you still living in sin?
They all are now.
I wonder how Jesus feels about your non-marriage. But, you know, Garrett, it's also proof in the pudding of what I've said for a long time. Maybe the answer with these wing nuts is to give them what they want. And then turn it against them.
Yeah, I mean, this is the perfect example. They have what they want, and oops, because they are morons. I mean, this is why we have Morant Monday. They do these dense things. They don't think it through all the way because every action has a reaction. I mean,
well, now I have to Garrett, I have to correct a flaw. You just said they don't think it through all the way.
Yeah.
You've committed grave error here. Because you've used right winger and think in the same sentence.
Oh yeah. I'm sorry.
And it's not that they don't think it through all the way. It's that they don't think it through at all. We just got us a bill here, and we're gonna protect us some marriage.
I wouldn't be surprised if they get down to it, and one of the Democrats put it in that bill. I wouldn't be shocked if it was written by a Democrat just as a, you know, a joke.
Well, you know, leave it to them liberals to look at a perfectly God-fearing constitutional amendment and try to turn it into something twisted, satanic, and perverted.
I mean,
everybody knows we're still married because Jesus wants us to be.
Yeah, but the law says that you are. And, you know, isn't the law written by the Jesus? That's what they think.
Yeah, they did it for him. Exactly. But you're right. That is sublime, sublime morality. However, is the entire state of Louisiana absolutely ablaze with Les Miles right now? I don't know. And for those who don't follow sports, Les Miles just screwed himself right out of a football game on Saturday. It was a beautiful thing.
Vern Lundquist, I thought
Vern Lundquist was going to have an on-air aneurysm.
I thought he was going to do let a WTF out there. I mean, he was just like, and then amazing.
Well, Gary Danielson was in no better shape.
They were all like, I can't even remember who Lundquist is. Now
wasn't that Gary Danielson?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, everybody was incredulous in the studio. They were all, the only bigger meltdown for football was Lou Holtz on ESPN studio show after Notre Dame lost. He was, you know, I mean, I almost felt the spittle there with Lou Holtz, but everybody was like, oh my God.
Oh, he just about morphed into Sylvester the cat right in front of our very eyes.
Oh, I mean, he's been working.
He's got to be making some decent money. We got We got to get loose and better fit in dentures.
That or because my mother was watching that whole thing, him talking like I think last weekend or whatever. It's like, one, she thought he was dead. Two, she was like, did he have like a stroke or something? I mean, because the lisp is bad.
Well, actually, that's not a lisp. I think, what is it? There's a name for that thing. It's called a lateral S or something in speech pathology.
Yeah, because I know that he does work charity. I mean, on all seriousness, I know that Holt does work for charity work for people with speech issues. I know that much, but, you know, it's gotten more pronounced in the last few years.
But, you know, the fact that they hired him on and didn't even ask him to remotely hide his Notre Dame bias is.
Oh, yeah. Mark May has been spending the whole year ripping him apart because, I mean, Mark May's like, what are you talking about?
Now, see, I don't bear a lot of love to Mark May either because he's from Pitt.
I don't much either, but, I mean, at least he's been, you know, like, why? I mean, when Holtz was like, oh, after the UNR Notre Dame game, it was like, Lou Holtz like, they're going to win. They're going to win it all. And it's like, Mark May's like, why?
Do you follow the what is it called, the Late Night Final? Is that the show that Mark May and Lou Holtz and other guy whose name I can't remember do?
Occasionally, it depends on, you know, if my move, you know, if I'm watching TV at that point, you know, or what have you.
Oh, well, if you're any kind of a college football fan, that's worth the effort because the little courtroom segment where Mark May and and Lou Holtz argue is just not to be missed.
It is classic. I'm just dense and I don't, you know, I try, you know, use the weekend to like catch up on podcasts or what, some stupid reason prevents me from watching it every week. But yeah, that segment, I've seen it multiple times and it is hilarity.
He was coming unglued because you got to, you know, at the beginning of the season, he had Notre Dame vying for the national championship.
Yeah, I mean and the thing is that he had them undefeated.
Yes,
it's like all the other ones were like they're going to lose three games. I'm like, yeah, probably maybe Michigan, definitely USC, and maybe some other game. And no.
And see, but I mean, you know, I expect that with the boys up at the bar, you know, the diehard Mountaineer fans who said, well, you know, we're gonna go undefeated and vie for the national championship. And I said, you know, I love the Mountaineers as much as you do, but come on, please.
Well, I would say I'm a pretty big fan of Notre Dame, and I chat regularly with at least one other person. We weren't even undefeated. We thought they had a pretty good chance because the cupcake schedule. I mean, yeah, nobody expected UConn to have a team-defining event like a player getting murdered, you know, that just, you know, brought them together, you know. But the rest of it was pretty predictable as cupcakes, especially since your old buddy Rich up in Michigan. I mean,
we call him Plugs around here.
I mean, it's been hilarious. I mean, you know. And it's like, it's funny, especially with Ohio State, because earlier, I chat with people that are from Ohio, around Lake Cincinnati area. It's like the fanboy rage over some of those Ohio State losses and the gameplay early in the year, just ridiculous. And now they're in the Rose Bowl.
Yeah, poor old Iowa. All they had to do, yeah. And it... I'm unglued.
I think somebody's rooting for. Does somebody that calls in root for Oregon State?
Oregon. We've got Oregon fans. Maybe a couple of Oregon State fans. Hey, the most important Civil War of the entire series, perhaps.
I have to kind of hope for Oregon State to win. I mean, that's why I brought it up.
I think you just lost friends, Garrett.
Because, Oregon State is barely ranked, and I want the BCS to die, okay?
Oh, yeah. Oh, please.
I mean, that's the only reason.
Well, and the same thing goes for, I want a, you know, I attended the University of Alabama. I am biologically required to root for the Crimson Tide, but I can't do it as long as Nick Saban is there. And I want Auburn to beat them so badly I can taste it.
Oh, and I mean,
and then I want them to beat Florida, because I want a one loss. I want a team with a loss playing for the national championship, while the TCUs and so forth sit out there and go, "Hello, unbeaten."
Yeah. Boise State and TCU will play in like whatever the tier two bowl is this year. I mean, because there's another moron, because Dan Patrick frickin' interviewed the head of the. One of the heads of the BCS last week. Oh, my God. More BS has not been... It was so much BS, I thought he was in Congress. I mean, it was bad. And of course, the rage from the listeners, you know.
Oh, by the way, and Mora has explained, that is a lateral emission lisp that Lou Holtz has.
Oh, okay, yeah. It just seems like it's weird that it's just gotten more pronounced, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean...
Well, Garrett, it's good talking to you, and I fear we've run off the sports-hating part of the audience, so please forgive us. But it's always fun. It's always fun talking about it.
They might forgive us, especially, you know, I mean, at least we got in something politics-related.
Indeed, we did, and because this all is related, that's like me talking about the titanium that went into the belt buckle might be handy to have in the hip replacement, and David in Tennessee reminds me, well, you know, Bob, the old jocks will get the hip replacement if they have coverage to that doesn't exclude hip injuries due to college football as a pre-existing condition.
Yeah, but the thing is that's why sports turns off a lot of liberals, because their consumption and their right wing attitude, in some corners, it's like slaps you in the face. I mean, like the whole God bless America ever since 9/11. I mean, oh, you know, and stuff like that. It's like.
Oh, look, I'm tired of U.S. fighter jets flying over football stadiums, okay? I mean, that fuel. You know, that fuel's needed. And I realize that we've got this nationalistic frenzy going on. But you know what? We don't need to fly fighter jets over football stadiums anymore.
Or helicopters. The newest issue of Sports Illustrated has they have the picture segment at the beginning of the issue. And they have one for Boise State beating up on somebody from a week or two ago. That's like all before the game. That's like all these Apache helicopters doing a flyby over the stadium. It's like, oh, it's like, you know, it's like they're trying to alienate. And I mean, there's a lot of left, as we've discussed, there's a lot of left-wing people, including ourselves, that love the sports. I mean, the sports writers, there's people that call the games that could be classified as such. It's just, and it's like such an affront sometimes.
Oh, it's...
And that's even when the players are all angels and, you know, have halos over their heads. I mean, you know, which seems to happen rarely these days. I mean...
True.
At least in some cases they do slap them down pretty... Some teams slap them down pretty hard. I mean, you know, the final insult for the Kansas City Chiefs with Larry Johnson was when he started calling people, you know, gay slurs, you know, the one that starts with the letter F, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
You know, online, of course, you know, the Bengals being the Bengals, or the Bungles, if you will. You know, they needed a running back, and they signed him instantly. But not until after he cleared waivers, because that would be, you know...
That would be improper.
I mean, that is, you know, that's the thing. It's funny how they save money. I mean, because you know what? Those, the titanium steel, the titanium belt buckle, making Nike a whole lot of more money. It may cost less to ship, but it, you know, they're charging a premium.
Oh, sure they are.
I mean, that's the way business, new and improved.
Well, look, I mean, let's make sure we work some politics into this too. I hate the name of the new unis. Nike Pro Combat. Does this mean that football uniforms can now do double duty in the hills of Afghanistan? Will they turn AK-47 rounds now? Nike Pro Combat? I mean, come on.
And the funny thing is that even they knew that it was wrong, because after 9/11, you stopped hearing things like sudden death, overtime, in pro.
No, two words, Garrett, two words. Pat Tillman.
Oh, yeah, until Pat Tillman.
Nike Pro Combat uniform. Yeah. Hey, I got to roll on, Garrett, but that was fun.
Yeah.
All right, take care. Bye now.
Bye.
And onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Oh, that me?
That's you.
That's me. Oh, well, for crying out loud. Hello, Bob. This is Laura.
Well, hey, Laura.
Hey, how you doing?
How's our Sue?
Oh, well, we've got a speech ahead of us, but I think she'll be, you know, as good as she's going to be. Where do I want to start with this? What was supposed to be an hour, hour and a half was over 3 hours till they were finally done.
Oh, geez.
Dr. Miller started out with, going after, well, investigating the problem in the lower leg. All three arteries in her lower leg were blocked. And the one that he finally wound up working on is an artery that runs down the inside of your leg, ankle, into the foot, and mainly into the big toe area, which is the problem with her left foot. He started out and finally decided, this is what I'm going to do, but he wanted to see if he could dissolve the clot to the point where he could flush it and, you know, get rid of it that way. So he puts her over in another room with this medication going, and he has come in and he's telling me about this, what he's doing. He goes, and I'm going to be right next door doing a procedure, so if there's a problem, I'm right there. But I want to see if we can get around it and not have to do anything further. So he does the other procedure, and I'm finding this out like an hour and a half later then, where the medication didn't do what he hoped it would.
Mm-hmm.
So he wound up having to do the balloon, which he said opened it up, but not as much as he wanted. He goes, but at least it's open. So, you know, we have to go this period of time. They used, it's not a collagen plug, and I can't think what they called it, but she still had to lay with the sandbag on the groin. Or, well, 3 hours. And when she finally got to her room where she's at now, and I finally got taken up to her room, and I had to wait while they were doing, taking the vitals and all this stuff and what have you. And when I finally got in to see her, she looked and she goes, oh, Mom, my foot feels so good. And I was like, thank God it's getting circulation. You know, and they use the little Doppler thing, this little handheld thing they can, you know, listen for the pulse in your foot.
Right.
And the pulse that wasn't really there last week when Dr. Miller had the AVI Doppler done was there today. So there is blood flow going back to the foot. But he did say her best therapy is going to be walking. You know, and it's like, great.
Hey, that's a great time for that prescription. What a wonderful time of year.
And that's the truth, you know. And, you know, and was talking with my sister and telling Bonnie about it. I said, you know, when I worked at the Kmart store here in Ashland, we had several older gentleman that come in and walked every day except for Saturday and Sunday. Monday through Friday, they were there by 8:15. They knew how many trips around that store would make a mile.
Right.
And when they had made their mile, they just disappeared like a puff of smoke. And it's like I told John, these guys have become so much a part of our Kmart family, we even invited them to come have breakfast with Santa, and they did. You know, and they just loved it. But it's like I was telling Bonnie, these same guys would go to the Walmart store, and they walked a couple, three times, and was finally told by Walmart's management, you're not allowed in here today.
Yeah, you got to get out of here.
You got to leave. So my only thought, I told Bonnie, is that we've got a Hawkins grocery store here in Ashland, and I know we could go out there and walk, and Dan Donatini would have no problem with it. So I said, you know, weather's bad, and we can hoof it out to Hawkins, do some walking, buy some groceries, and come home. And we've got our exercise when the weather's bad. But she is just so thoroughly exhausted from 4 weeks of almost no sleep, 15 minutes here, 20 minutes, you know. If she ever got anything over 30 minutes, it was a rarity, you know. So she is just, when I left at 3:30, she was still exhausted, and it's like, I was up at 3:30 getting ready to go today, and I said, I just pooped. I told Sue, I said, I'm going home, get stuff done I need to do. I said, I'm going to bed early. You're sleeping. You don't need me sitting here. So all in all, everything went good today. Could have been better, but we'll take what we've got.
Well, here. What's the prognosis for coming home and all of that stuff?
Well, they didn't really say anything, and my feeling is if she's home by Wednesday, I will be surprised. I just kind of have a feeling, especially with, you know, going through the groin, which I had to do as far as that goes, but seeing how this blood flow continues, which was one of the things I really watched last year, was seeing how this blood flow kept going and then getting her up and getting her around and walking. God bless her. She's, in the 10 days from when she had that AVI Doppler done till we were back over, she'd lost 10 pounds just walking. And I was like, holy cow.
Well, you know that she's got incentive, too, of course, Laura.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Because we've been talking a lot about Netroots Nation next summer. And she's absolutely committed to hiking all over some hotel in Vegas.
Oh yeah, she wants to go. She wants to go in the worst way, and come hell or high water, she'll get there one way or another. You know.
Yeah.
But yeah, she's got, and the fact that Dr. Miller told her, you could lose this leg, was another great incentive, I think, to get her going, and keep her going like she's done these last almost 2 weeks. To get her to the point where she's in the hospital, they've done what they can. Now the rest of it's kind of going to be up to her. You know, I don't ever expect to see either foot 100% like it was before. But at least she's still got 2 feet to stand on. And it'll just take some time to get to the point where this is what I've got. Now I'll just deal with it and go on from there. You know, and knowing her and knowing the mindset she can have when she puts her mind to it, the girl can do anything she wants.
Once she gets good and hard-headed about it.
Oh, yeah. She's like her dad when it comes to that. When she wants to be hard-headed, she can. She's got a good bloodline there.
I'm sure you'll be going back over tomorrow morning.
Please
tell her that we are all thinking of her. I've already gotten an email in from Renee Louise, who said... Uh-huh. She was Thunderstone in the chat room, but she says, gosh, I miss all of you. When a rare moment permits and when I can get an internet connection, one of these days I'll be able to afford an internet service. I do catch you live. Otherwise, I work my way through the archives. She says, my main concern at the moment, however, is Sue. I just heard about the surgery. Please let her know for me that I'm holding her especially close in my thoughts and heart, sending many healing thoughts her way.
Oh, bless her heart. and bless all of you for keeping through in your thoughts and your prayers. And it's greatly appreciated. It really is. It really is, you know. She'll be tickled when she gets home and she can sit down and open up the laptop and get into the chat room just to see hi, and all the questions. Yeah, and that's why I decided to call in, you know, is to, you know, keep typing over and over and over again when I could just tell everybody in one shot that this is what's happened, this is where she's at, and, well, tomorrow's another day and we'll go from there and see how she is and go from there.
Yes, that's the Scarlett O'Hara philosophy. Tomorrow is another day.
Yep, that's for sure.
And that's all we can really do. But I thought about her all weekend long, and I'm glad to know that it went as well as it did.
Yeah.
And just tell her that we are rooting for her for all we're worth, and can't wait to see her back in the chat room.
Yep, I will pass the word along to her. So.
Oh, and I don't know if she saw this or not, but you can tell her that Cafe Press changed their ways too. They decided to pull that Psalm 109:8 business once and for all.
Oh, she will be tickled pink.
I had a feeling she might.
She will be tickled pink. Yeah, because she was just a little twisted on that one.
Yeah.
A little twisted? That's an understatement. She was torqued. Oh, shoot. So, okay, well, I'm going to get back in the chat room here, listen for a little bit, and then it's like I just told Mary and I told my sister Bonnie, Kitty Cat doesn't know it, but her and I are going to bed at 9 o'clock tonight. She likes it or not.
All right, sounds good, Laura. Take care, and thanks for updating us.
All righty. Thank you, Bob. Take care, and love to everybody.
All right, and bye now.
Bye-bye.
So, however you do it, send your good thoughts, your prayers, if you're a praying type. Whatever you do, send them Sue's way. I'm sure that she. Well, I know that she'll appreciate them, and maybe it'll help her get real hard headed about getting as good as she can be and being up and about. And because I know she wants to be in Vegas for Netroots Nation so bad she can taste it. So be thinking of her, please. And onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
What? Sue has my best wishes, that's for sure.
Thank you, Reverbo.
I don't usually call you on Monday night, but this being a short week and all, plus your topic at the top of the show, I was in the kitchen cutting up my vegetables for my dinner.
With your titanium steel kitchen knife?
Exactly. And just a minute here.
Thank you.
Oh, it makes quick work of all this of that zucchini, let me tell you. And you were wondering, what is it that just motivates these people to do this kind of crap? I mean, it isn't important. We don't need titanium belt buckles. Now, I was going to say that I can see that using titanium on the hardware on women's brassieres might make them lighter and faster, but I'm not going to say that.
Right.
So I'm going to just head into what I was going to say.
Because even if it's a titanium steel underwire, the fact of the matter is it's still going to set off the metal detector at the airport, and they're still going to make, because, you know, that's what, do you remember the Bush administration, those eight long nightmarish tortured years when the Transportation Security Administration was having septuagenarian grandmothers remove their bras to go through the, you remember that? I remember that.
I don't know where my guilt is.
Making nursing mothers drink their own mother's milk to prove that it wasn't, terrorist mother's milk. Yeah.
God, did those guys have us coming and going? One
of these days, if I flew more, it would probably be much more likely, Reverbo. But if I flew more, sooner or later, I would show up at an airport in flip-flops and a Speedo.
Well, people tend to travel like that anyway, just because Americans just become such slobs. But don't sit next to me if you're going to show up on an airplane in your muscle shirt and your flip-flops. Okay?
I know. But, I mean, I think that's the absurdest response to an absurd paranoia. Because, you know, you got to take your shoes off, and you got, and you know, you can't. I was going through security one day, and I actually had one of those little tiny, because I was about to leave it in the hotel room, and the shaving kit was already packed, and I'm Scots, and you know, so I had my little tube of toothpaste was left out, my little traveling tube of toothpaste, and I just pocketed it. Because it was plastic.
And they shook you down.
And I wound up standing in the square plexiglass stall where everybody could see me. You know, hi, hello. Hi, I'm Bob, and I'm a terrorist.
Yeah.
Hi, Bob! And the guy said, no, dumbass. He says, you know, that stuff's lined with aluminum.
Like we know that?
Right.
So you need to make them out of titanium.
Well, there you go.
But that, you know, we were just talking about, like, my mom, I'm going to get to this great point, which we were kidding about last week. My mom would not be down with the idea of me traveling, you know, wearing a sleeveless undershirt, you know, and a Speedo and some flip-flops. And that led me back to something we were talking about last week, just the whole mom test. I mean, what would your mom say if she knew that you were leaving these poor countries, just an absolute freaking mess, just to plunder them for your empire building? Would your mom like that?
Mama wouldn't like it worth a hoot.
Uh-uh. She'd tell you to go back there and clean that up, wouldn't she?
Yes, she would.
Absolutely. And I mean,
unless Mama was Sarah Palin.
Well, yeah, well, there's always that, yeah, sled trash people. But we're just talking about, you know, most people's mamas. I mean, I don't know what we were doing. We were kidding about that last week about some other. About apologizing. And that goes back to something else we were talking about tonight, about this, the non apology that you heard on the NBA game,
yeah.
On Fox. Yeah, we're sorry if anybody out there, you know, was just so sensitive that they didn't, you know, they made a big deal about this. But
because he only compared him to Borat in a good way.
Yeah, I mean, Lord knows you'd never just come out and say we're sorry. Just leave it at that. You have to go, yeah, if anybody was, you know, one of those kind of people, just had a, like, you know, wasn't really... What do you call that when you're... Well, we know. Any of you out there with a thin hide, you know, we're sorry, but that's kind of your problem.
Yeah.
Oh, that was kind of an apology.
Yeah, we do not believe that they intended... I mean, who is the vice... You know, because you know that somewhere in Rupert Murdoch's empire, there is the vice president of weasel words. We do not believe they intended to insult Mr. Hamadidi.
Just keep digging that hole deeper. That's all I can say for them. But you were wondering, you know, what are all the components in this? What is the deal with this titanium underpants or whatever? And I got to thinking that it is kind of a combination of this, of like this, the religious dominion concept, you know, just trample all over everything we're you know, entitled to by supernatural powers. And you just, and then you, what could be added to that would make it worse? Well, of course, what would make it worse is this sort of capitalist greed thing, right? And that's just whatever's handy for them. Either, well, we'll never run out of that, or, well, it doesn't matter. We'll just, you know, they just have this total short-term thinking of everything, just like they do with global warming. Like, whatever, like, at first, I think that the response was, well, people don't cause global warming. But now that they look like fools saying that, and I'm not saying people cause all global warming, but to act like people cause none is just foolish. And now I've heard some arguments like, well, global warming is actually a good idea, you know, that we won't have to, like, turn the heat up in the wintertime is on.
Right, and we'll be able to grow grapefruits in Finland.
Yeah, I mean, whatever's handy for them. And so you got those two things going on, and Yeah, and the next thing you know, you're basically just oppressing and destroying the world. And then I got to thinking, what would, you know, the back to the mom test. You know, here's the deal. We're fortunate that we live in, well, okay, just off the mistake. We are extremely fortunate that we live in the United States. And that we have IMAX on our desk, you know, and some of us are still somewhat enjoying the fruits of this, of our short 300 and some year distance here. And I think it's okay if you're like a first world nation, you've got a lot of money and you know, it's okay to enjoy a high-tech life. It's okay to enjoy, you know, the best food and the best cars and the best of everything. But the whole thing to me is, if you can afford to enjoy them, then you can afford to clean it up after you're done with it. And you can afford to go, whenever you go fetch it, you can at least do it in a fair way that doesn't oppress people. And that's the whole part that seems to be lacking. It's just make a mess, walk away.
Right. I mean, there are efforts out there, you know, the fair trade movement being one of them. But even at the end of the day, you have to acknowledge, Reverbo, that the great big open mining pits always have a way of not showing up in the Hamptons or Westchester.
Oh, not even close.
Or, whatever the Tony part of town is, and the dumping is always done in the Dominican Republic. I mean, you probably saw that story a while back about the fact that the coal ash is being shipped and dumped in, you know, Haiti or the Dominican Republic, and all the children are sick and dying, and it's cancer, Or maybe it's just Alabama.
Right. Well, they're just like the underclass. We don't care about that.
But again, if it goes to Alabama, it does not go up there north of Tuscaloosa by the Tuscaloosa County Yacht Club. Yes, they've got a yacht club in Tuscaloosa. I know.
One can only imagine. Well, yeah, this decision was made, you know, eons ago, who the haves were, who you were going to piss on and who you were going to pour champagne on. And they got that one figured out.
But I have to say that the new model I'm living in the middle of the new model. Because I was just checking email earlier this evening, and lo and behold, it turns out that there's a mountaintop removal permit that has been applied for right next to the Kanawha State Forest, which is smack dab in the middle of an area of Charleston that is just chock-a-block with, our betters.
Really?
Yeah. Hey, sucker, you're getting some, too. You know, I may go and this would make me, I say this facetiously. I may go and advocate for that permit.
that would count as irony, I believe.
Now, I believe it would, because and you know what? There's coal in Pocahontas County, West Virginia, too. There's only two counties in West Virginia that don't have recoverable coal in it, and Pocahontas ain't one of them. But our senator Jay Rockefeller, who has never met a mountain that he didn't live near, that he didn't want blown up, oddly enough, has none near him. I'm waiting for the day when Massey or Consol or Peabody or Arch decides to open up a mountaintop removal permit right next to Jay Rockefeller's little cabin. I think it's called his cabin. You can imagine what a Rockefeller cabin looks like.
This is the same Jay Rockefeller who endorses Medicare for All or endorses
Yes. Yes.
God, what is up with that guy? How many sides can you play at the same time?
Well, we need the Medicare for All because the coal that he advocates for is killing all of us, and we got to have some health care here. It's a perfectly consistent position.
It makes sense to me.
But the minute they announce that permit next to Jay's cabin, I'm going to the hearing. I'm going to use twice as much. Because you know what it's about? It's all we got in common is our misery, and the least we can do is share it.
There you go. I mean, do you think, did you ever buy into this idea that we should feel guilty just in this really overall general way of that we happen to just by, you know, blind luck, you know, be born in the United States instead of, well, Zanzibar.
No, I don't buy into it, Reverbo, because it isn't blind luck. We are the elect. God put us here because he likes us better.
Oh, damn. I hear the whole
did you, now, doggone it, did you miss that one day in the fall semester of Calvinism 101 when they explained all that?
I was out in the parking lot smoking cigarettes.
Yeah, see?
Damn, this whole time I had it wrong. Anyway, I didn't ever bought into that. I was always okay with it, as long as you were responsible. It's this total... It's the God... What the oil companies do, that whole business going on down there in Mexico, you know about that? Just dumping, I mean, these just bubbling pools of crap everywhere, and they walk away. There's lawsuits about that, and then the whole business in Africa. I think that guy that killed that guy, I don't have all the facts here.
Yeah, we're going to have to narrow that just a little bit more. It is Planet Earth, that guy that killed that guy.
Yeah, that's right. I'm not doing that. So the some country in Africa has been in the news recently, or for years, this huge lawsuit against, is it BP, is it Shell, is it, they're just basically destroying their country.
Yes, probably both.
Yeah, and just like they do in Mexico, they go down there and they just...
What makes me think we're talking about Nigeria?
Yeah, Nigeria. I think one of the lead people on there, they hunted him down, and I think he's dead. But they won the lawsuit. I know
the story you're talking about now. Yes.
I don't know if anybody's going to ever pay up, but they.
And it is Nigeria.
But they won it. When was the first oil crisis? You remember? It was like 73. What?
73. 72,
73. Yeah. So this is all this back to this whole Dominion thing and plundering. We should never be in the mess with it now. Ever.
No.
It's just absolute short-term greed. That's all it is.
And you and I did have an email exchange, and I'll go ahead and I will reiterate what I said. No, we shouldn't be here now. But we have a lot. There's a lot about November the 22nd, 1963, that puts us here.
Oh, I agree. I agree with that. It's unbelievable to speculate how different the world would be if those Kennedy boys had lived, and Bobby Kennedy would have become president. Oh, well, you didn't ever have Ronald Reagan. You didn't ever have Nixon.
No Nixon. No Reagan. No Ford. No Watergate.
Any George, any of the Bush.
No Vietnam. Okay, let's be really clear about that. No Vietnam, Reverbo.
Probably not.
I've mentioned this book that's incredibly difficult to get through. You know, again, not because of the density of the language or the toughness of the concepts, but just, you know, because I know how the movie ends.
Yeah.
And I'm constantly reminded. But the fact of the matter is, JFK had issued. Well, you remember during the Bush administration, how every time we turned around, there was a new executive order that told us what we couldn't, you know, you can't know this or thou shalt not know that, and you will not sue an oil company and all that stuff. Well, there was a time in this country when executive orders were actually used for more broadly humane policy purposes. And John Kennedy had signed an executive order that would have had us completely out of Vietnam. I mean, but out. By 1965. And the first 1,000 were to come home beginning, I believe, in January 1964. Because we didn't have that many there in the first place.
Well, that guy, he pissed everybody off. There wasn't anybody left who he didn't piss off, except... We never knew any of this stuff. The people who were, you know.
And we still don't for the most part. I mean, I was clicking around last night and I stopped on, you know, the All Hitler Network or the Discovery or A&E or whatever it was. And there was this documentary about JFK in which, of all people, Tom Hartman was there on video footage alleging that it was an inside job of organized crime.
Yeah, I think he was going to be on the Discovery Channel over the weekend. And then he and that other guy, that guy Waldron, they've been writing, they've written a book about this.
And and just having read what I've read, maybe ultimately it was organized crime that did the job, but there were, I don't know, it's like an Agatha Christie novel. There are entirely too many people with motive and opportunity.
Oh, it's insane. I mean, he pissed off Wall Street, he pissed off CIA, he pissed off the mob, he pissed off the Cubans, he pissed off the Texans, he pissed off all the conservatives.
The Reagans, the Bushes, John Wayne.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, his brother was even more of a shark than he was. I mean, his brother was going after organized crime like nothing that he'd never seen as Attorney General. I mean, they were just, those two were something. So first you, what do you call it? First you get the head and then...
Yeah, imagine, I know it's entirely too speculative, but imagine an America that doesn't have to deal with Vietnam and that social upheaval. And imagine that as it was looking, imagine a JFK administration that turns more toward the civil rights movement because if there was a failing, it was that they kept, it was that John Kennedy kept saying, to MLK, give me more time. Give me more time. We'll get there. It's just going to take a little more time. And MLK kept saying, no, now. Now. And I don't think it's unreasonable to think that the Kennedy brothers would have gotten to the point where they understood that incrementalism does not work with people who breathe from their mouths and walk on their knuckles. And I'm talking about, the White South. And, you want that list of stuff we don't have to put up with? We don't have to put up with the congresswoman from Mayberry standing on the floor of the House claiming that Republicans brought about civil rights in this country.
God, the lies get so absurd. You almost don't even know how to respond to that. Hasn't this woman heard of Lyndon Johnson?
No, never mind Lyndon Johnson. Hasn't this woman heard of Lester Maddox? Hasn't this woman heard of Jesse Helms? Hasn't this woman heard of Strom Thurmond?
They weren't big reporters, as I recall. They weren't in the vanguard.
I mean, daggum, Strom Thurmond left the Democratic Party in 1948. He was in the vanguard of the white supremacist movement.
Yeah, it's just stunning. I don't know. I think it's sort of, it's not that hard to kind of imagine what it would have been like. I mean, for sure you would have never had Nixon. Right there, I agree with you. It doesn't sound like you would have had Vietnam, and all those resources could have been applied.
One of the reasons they had such a hard time bringing about some of Lyndon Johnson's Great Society stuff. Was because the money kept getting sucked into down the Vietnam War vortex. It kind of does. Oh, we can't have health care because we got to keep killing brown people in Iraq.
There you go. Sorry, we spent all the money on killing people overseas. That's pretty helpful. And what did you get out of that? How'd that work out for you?
Got a T-shirt.
Well, let's see, we got a whole bunch of dead American soldiers. We got to the 10th power, the dead folks in the countries that we were fighting in. And then last I looked, we have not really avenged a single death in the people who died in New York.
That would be no.
That's working out really well for everybody. But no, I think it's God.
Yeah, there's your pro combat.
I'm all for shooting people as long as you shoot the right people and they deserve it. But hiring the Marines, having capital, having corporations hire my Marines is not acceptable to me. I don't think they did that exactly in Vietnam. Although I don't know, we had talked about this too. There were some resources over there that were never.
Well, and it's the law of unintended consequences because you got to remember that the midwife of the rise of Kellogg Brown and Root, at the time referred to as Kellogg Burn and Root. The midwife to all of that was Lyndon Baines Johnson. They were his cronies. They were cronies of his when he was in the House and when he was in the Senate. Little Texas outfit, drilling rigs and so forth, build the occasional dam, little highway work. And they got the contract for what were called in Vietnam tiger cages.
Oh, swell. Yeah, I know. Okay. Little torture action back then?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, well, he had his buddy, the Hughes Aircraft. Hey, elect me and I'll get you your war, or something like that.
Well, and that's the thing. That executive order, as of November the 23rd, 1963, the executive order that ended, that would have ended the Vietnam conflict before it ever really got going real good. Thanks for playing. It was as if it never happened.
Yeah, it's,
you know, that's 55. That's 50.
What happened to us? We would have had Clubhouse on Mars by now.
Yes. I might be broadcasting from Mars by now. I mean,
we would be wearing some pretty damn stylish threads in that case, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we had just gone nowhere. That was it. Well, either that or the December 31st, 1969, would either the end of the world as we know it, or most likely November 22nd, 1963.
Yeah, I mean, there are seminal moments in American history. For the post-Civil War era, it's April 1865.
There you go.
Because, and there are open questions as to whether even Lincoln could have managed the hardcore Republicans with their fangs dripping blood for vengeance against the South. But absent Lincoln, there wasn't a prayer. And again, those and oddly enough, the ripples from that stone thrown in the pond are still washing up against our collective existential shore in 2010.
Well, they are. Talk about vampires, people that cannot be killed. We're still dealing with these folks. They're sleeping in their old coffins tonight.
Yeah, a little soil from the old country. Yep.
Yeah.
And so if you consider that fact, and I believe I know that to be fact, that we are still dealing with the repercussions of Abraham Lincoln's assassination. And what happens, you know, the sort of rift in the fabric of time that happens when those things occur. If you consider that, then how far out will the ripples of November the 22nd, 1963 go, Reverbo? Is it safe to say that they will go to January the 1st, 2100?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I won't be around for, and they'll still be rippling.
I mean, it's still not entirely clear who was behind the murder of the brothers Gracchi in ancient Rome. But we know what happened to ancient Rome as a result.
That book you're reading is on my list too. I've heard nothing but great, great stuff about that book.
It's tough, and I'm a bad person because I was supposed to have had the author on to talk about it by now, but I don't. I'll be honest. I take my book interviews fairly seriously, and I don't know if I'm prepared to hear everything that this man has to offer. And I'm not talking in terms of knowing exactly who it was, you know, on the grassy knoll or whatever, but rather the depth of the perfidy that occurred inside the United States government. I mean, I'm 200 pages in, and my head is spinning, Reverbo, just to know what the Joint Chiefs of Staff and the CIA alone were up to. Do you know, everybody says, yeah, well, you know, the CIA was going to put poison powder in Fidel Castro's shoes to make his beard fall out. Everybody had dumbasses. Do you know they had a plan to kill him with a poisoned skin diving suit?
I thought they were going to release bats over Cuba or something.
That, you know. But no, they had a plan to kill Castro with a poisoned skin diving suit that was only forestalled by virtue of the fact, I mean, now talk about your crazy coincidences. The guy who was working on a rapprochement with Castro had already presented him with a dive suit that wasn't poisoned. Now, I don't know where you get to the point where you think that, you know, what do you give to the man, the Cuban man who has everything? Oh, a scuba suit. But lo and behold, it had already been done, and the CIA was left to sit there in Virginia and go, ah, it was a good one, too. He's already got one.
Missed it by that much. Oh, God, things were so crazy and twisted back then. It almost, the scary thing is just how many secrets are going on right now. You just expect the thing to just any day now to just. On the other hand, they don't seem to do anything they're very transparent with their perfidy these days. They just give us the finger just out in broad daylight for everyone to see. At least the last 8 years they did, and so that hasn't seemed to rouse enough people yet to.
Do you remember George Bush's first foray out into the wide wide world on the 4th of July?
You keep bringing him up.
It was his first 4th of July visit, and I believe he went to Philadelphia. And he was working the rope line, shaking hands, and this guy is shaking his hand, and he goes, you know what? You are a terrible president. Just, you know, the whole time shaking his hand, and George looks at him and goes, who gives an F what you think?
Oh, that's priceless. It's totally predictable.
And, you know, that's the GOP approach to governance. Who gives a what you think? You don't want to go to Iraq? Who gives what you think? You don't want to do Afghanistan? Who gives what you think?
Yeah.
You think we should be prepared for natural disasters and we shouldn't just let an entire city full of people drown? Who gives what you think? You think that we shouldn't create these phony baloney monetary bubbles with naked short selling and cripple the entire economy for the sake of a small handful of creeps on Wall Street? Who gives a what you think?
And in the process, pretty much destroys, you know, everybody's retirement fund. Yeah.
Who gives a what you think?
Well, now we're back to the top of the show. That's how you get titanium
belt buckles.
No, that's exactly how you do it. Who gives a damn what you think? I guarantee you, if we keep going like this, there will be a titanium crisis in probably 50 years. And we can look back and go, hey, we saw it coming. You know, how many titanium crises do we
And by that time, how many pairs of Nike Pro Combat football pants will be in a landfill somewhere? Where we can't even recycle the titanium belt buckles.
By the way, that doesn't set off the metal detectors in airports because I have a titanium plate in my neck.
And ooh.
I don't set it off.
Well, maybe we do need to expand it into the ladies' lingerie line then.
Hey, did you happen to hear Ralph Nader real quick on Body Candy Energy Nader over the weekend?
I caught a little bit of it, yeah.
Okay, that book he was plugging, only the super rich can save us. Did you hear some of that?
No.
Oh yeah, it was. He pretty much. I mean, he's. There is only one thing we all need. I think we do know what to do, where to go, and we do have the plans, and we do have the vision. But what we don't have, of course, is the checkbook. And so Nader's wrote this. Fantasy, it's fiction, where, you know, George Soros and Oprah and Bobby Redford and T. Boone Pickens and, you know, all the multi-billionaires on the left, the liberals, get together and decide they're going to change the world. They're going to go up against the right. we're just going to, that's it. With enough money, there won't be any more atomic power plants. There won't be any more.
Right, the battle of the billionaires. And you know what? There's an element of truth in that, right? Because I am informed that there is not a an investment bank out there, not one, that will bankroll a nuclear power plant. Period.
Oh, well, you know who does bankroll it?
We the people.
Yeah, they at about 5 minutes before midnight, at some time in the last 20 years, I can't remember when, they got a little. They got around it by just saying we'll guarantee the policy because no insurance company will write a policy on any atomic plant. So they got it to where you and I get to do it.
Kind of like flood insurance.
Pretty much. But oh God, he was so good. He was instead of get your football analogy going a little more. It is. It's kind of like. The two teams, because, you know, I mean, that's really the only reason. That's how the this conservative, this evangelical neocon monster got started. It's basically like three or four billionaires. I think the guy that one of the Coors families started it, the bankrolled it, and a couple other people, and pretty soon just had these behemoths out there. And so that's, I mean, that's all. It's what I'm saying. In this country, I believe.
And the question is, will that happen in time? Because they're not just racing against the evil billionaires, they're racing against the very march of time itself, Reverbo.
Oh, we are running out of time. By the way, in your music library, if you have Randy Newman's song, It's Money That Matters, that might be a good one of the day.
I agree with you. I don't have that right now, but I've got another one that I think is an appropriate reference queued up. Let me just go ahead and make our third cheesy movie reference of the evening. When we talk about using, and this occurred to me as the show was opening, and I was talking about titanium for belt buckles. The truly awful, but eminently watchable, film, The Battle of the Bulge.
I don't know if I've seen that or not.
Henry Fonda. Telly Savalas, Charles Bronson, the Bookum Dano guy, the guy who played
Jack
Dano.
Lord?
No, not Jack Lord, Dano.
James McCarver.
Yeah, yes. And most particularly Robert Shaw. And Robert Shaw played the evil Panzer commander. And there is a scene toward the end of the movie where Robert Shaw is finally opening, turning on the lights for his aide-de-camp Hans. He's sitting in his little Panzer trailer in his spiffy black Panzer uniform. And he says, Hans, come here. And it's Robert Shaw. And God, you know, what was not the love about Robert Shaw? Yeah, just Jaws, that, whatever.
And he was in From Russia with Love.
Yeah, true. And he said, Hans, come in here. And Hans comes into his, and he says, look in that box. And Hans opens the box and says, is this dein chocolate cake? That is right, Hans. That was captured from an American soldier just this morning. We are doomed. The Americans have sufficient resources to mail chocolate cake across the Atlantic.
And we think
we do. And there went World War II for the Germans.
No, there it went.
And that's where we are, Riverbo. We think, you know, we think we could. They are making the belt buckles for their football pants out of titanium. The war is lost, Hans.
If only it were true. It all doesn't work anymore. That's all you. That's, oh God bless, they're making titanium football pants. They're ruined.
It is nothing, for they have so much titanium, they have leftovers from their jet building. They will be making titanium football helmets tomorrow.
Titanium undergarments for their women.
Yeah, they already have the titanium undergarments for their football players.
Oh, God. Yeah, it's a riot. It's a riot in those countries that have those titanium mines, boy. They're laughing up a storm.
Yeah, just laughing all the way to the poorhouse. You'll notice in the list that I read, it's not, you know, Titanium LLC of the Ubangi village. It's Titanium LLC of Ohio and Titanium LLC of Ireland and Titanium LLC of England and Belgium and, you know, again, the titanium mines aren't there. Barrett Goldstrike Limited of Canada, anyone?
I just want to go back to, it's just, I'm okay with having these things. If only we didn't leave everything in tatters to acquire it. I mean, there just should be this gigantic, I don't understand, I guess these countries, between the IMF and the World Bank, and all these corporations, I guess we have these countries just by the balls, and there's nothing they can do. They want the money so bad, and they don't realize that, oh, it's never going to make their people more prosperous, ever. It's just going to concentrate, it's just going to do everything that it does, and it's everything wrong is what it's going to do. And you just wish it would be like, you know, you have violated the highest principles on our planet, and you are banished. You are hereby banished from this land, never to do business here again. And I just...
A little corporate death penalty?
How many more titanium crises do we have to go through, Bob? I mean, I don't get it. The penalties just have to be enormous and definite.
Well, how is it that in ninth grade introductory physical science, Reverbo, I was introduced to the concept of finite resources and rare earth elements? My son is in the process of memorizing the periodic table right now. And somehow or another, the people who weren't me forgot? I mean, is that the trick, that there is a sufficient amount of capital that will induce amnesia?
Yes, there is. I don't think they don't care. They don't even care about their own descendants, let alone yours. But this is, you know, here we are really at the watershed. I wonder if you or I are going to live to see what happens. But something's going to happen in the next 20 years, 30 years at the outset. There's going to be something huge is going to happen. We are either going to
Yeah, and I don't think it's the Mayan calendar thing in 2012.
No, it's going to be the corporations. It's going to be like the Terminator. It's going to be the corporations against the people. Something's going to happen. I don't know if it'll be violent. I don't know if it'll be done from one cell phone to the other, like it seems to have started to being done in Iran and Latin America. And there's this, you know, maybe the technology of what they call the collective intelligence.
Well, that's like Soylent Green. I don't know if you've seen it or not, but it was a respectable film by Charlton Heston before he turned into a wingnut. And we tend to, you know, here in America, we call that a science fiction movie. Because it's got, you know, like people in New York and they're all crowded up and they're all trying to get these little crackers. And that's how they live and ain't nobody got no meat nor potatoes anymore. And we call that a science fiction movie because it ain't happening in New York no more. But it's happening all over the rest of the planet. And it ain't science fiction anymore. And Soylent Green is people.
People are getting chomped up metaphorically and literally. But on the other hand, I made a horrible mistake last week when I called, when I said I don't remember any revolutionary, you know, motifs when I was growing up, and of course I do. And it's the same damn thing. In the 60s, people were pretty much just rebelling against the same damn thing. You know, people running roughshod over other people. That's pretty much what it is.
Yeah, and their response was to form co-ops and talk about organics. And And
they also started the SBS and the Weathermen too. I mean, and just then, as an aside from that, you know, the capitalists aren't the only reckless empire builders. The socialists and the communists have made their mistakes.
Yeah, we just have better architecture.
Yeah, I mean
the fact of the matter is there are parts of Cuba and there are parts of the former Soviet Union, Chernobyl, that are so toxic that human beings cannot go there. What is it, Lake Baikal? That huge, huge, huge lake in the former Soviet Union that has just been horrifically toxified.
Oh, neither ideology has anything to be proud of. You're proud of, as far as stomping on the earth and stomping on people. Wouldn't you love to see that imagine the whole back to the football imagery with the billionaires facing off each other, facing off against each other, and a linebacker coming in with $29 billion. I have no idea how much he has. No. Number 63, George Soros.
Yeah, but you got to remember that Pete Coors is going to be in the backfield, and he's going to be a step faster because he's got them titanium belt buckles.
Maybe so, but flying in over the stadium as we speak on his ultra stylish solar gyrocopter with $9 billion. Number 13, T. Boone Pickens.
Pickens, 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 Pickens. I consider myself self to be the luckiest billionaire air. Yeah.
I don't know. I think Nader's right though. It's a question of cash. And by
Well, sure it is, and it's also a question of when, for instance, I mean, we've seen there were more wind and solar jobs added to the economy last year than there were hydrocarbon jobs. And as soon as it becomes economically feasible, or economically attractive, I should say, then there are. I mean, I'm not, just because I don't like Milton Friedman doesn't mean that I reject all concepts of market dynamics. And as soon as the rich people realize that there's money to be made out of it, we'll have it. But we have to wait on them. It's the same thing with healthcare, Reverbo. You know, and I've heard it said on this program, and I've heard it said by other people, that, you know, there are executives out there who would be in favor of universal single payer, but they realize that they would be excoriated within their own caste if they came out and spoke for it. You remember they called FDR a traitor to his class.
They did. Well, we can't afford the weight, though. No part of this progressive movement can afford to wait, though, because the other side just isn't going to budge. You're going to have to pry their hands off of the oil wells and off of the dynamite. They're just not budging.
No.
By the way, I hate Lou Holtz. I just thought I'd mention that.
I'm proud to know it.
I don't care. I don't even know what he's doing, and I don't even know if he's alive. But I hated him in the 80s and 90s, and I hate him still.
I didn't like him when he... Okay. I come by it honest. I didn't like him at Arkansas, and I didn't like him at Minnesota either.
He wanted to run for Congress. Remember that?
Yep.
And I was obsessed. I was a college football fan. The 70s, 80s, and 90s. I went and got that vaccine for it, and I'm cured now. But you will remember, you may or may not, that the Colorado Buffaloes went undefeated in 89.
Yes.
And they faced Lou. I was down there. We went down there for this. And the Buffs were not ready. And Notre Dame spoiled that undefeated season. I think they beat the Buffs like 21-6. But the following year, we met them again. And those creeps. Notre Dame meets Colorado in 1990 in the Orange Bowl, in the 91 Orange Bowl. And they had three losses.
And still made it to the Orange Bowl, yes.
Yeah, well, you know, because God makes sure that they do. And the Buffs barely did it that day. Beat them 10-9, as you recall. There was some controversy, a clipping on that punt return at the end of the game. But I don't want to hear that clipping in football on punt returns any more than I want to hear that holding on a line of scrimmage.
Or traveling in the NBA.
or when no one's looking, catching a soccer ball. I don't hear about it. So I'll take the AP. Number one, my Colorado Buffaloes.
Well, you know, you and I have a commonality then, because my Mountaineers had a perfect season, ruined by Notre Dame in what was referred to at the time as the Fiasco Bowl, in which Notre Dame came in and promptly snapped Major Harris like a twig, and from there on out. But then again, that was during the Don Nealon years, and that's when you watched the West Virginia Bowl game with a blanket over your head through the cracks in your fingers.
A bucket and some towels. Yeah.
I mean, I'll never forget when we played Florida in the Sugar Bowl. We were undefeated again. I think that was 88. And lo and behold, playing Florida, you know, we marched right down and scored a touchdown. It was 7-0 West Virginia, and that was turn off the TV because it wound up something like 42-7. And afterward, the Florida football players talked about how they could literally smell the sweat, smell the booze pouring out of the pores of the Mountaineer, because we'd been down there for a week in New Orleans, and you know, Don Nealon's approach to a bowl game was, well, gosh darn it, did the check clear? Yeah, turn them loose. It ain't like we're down here to play football or nothing.
God, yeah.
And this would be the same Don Nealon, by the way, and it bears mentioning, Reverbo. There was a Chinese mine explosion this past week that killed upwards of probably 100 miners or more now. Coal mine, of course, in one of the safer state-run coal mines of China. And it put me in mind of Don Nealon, who shortly after he retired and joined became the chief spokesman for the Friends of Coal, said, "Now, gosh darn it, I don't know a whole lot about coal mining. But I know that our heroic, patriotic coal miners, they have to put up with a lot of regulations from the government that makes it hard to mine coal. And if we could just get rid of some of these regulations and mine coal like they do in China, we'd be doing a lot more mining of coal."
How much did he get for making that speech?
Nobody's seen him at the soup kitchen or the shelter lately. Let's put it that way.
I don't know a whole lot about this, but I'm going to tell you a little about it right now.
Yeah, let me tell you how. I don't know nothing about this, but I'm going to tell you how we need to be doing it.
Nothing like a good coach to throw some.
I wish I had his email address. I'd email him every Chinese mine explosion story I found.
Oh yeah, there's a country we want to emulate from start to finish. The communist Chinese, yeah. From their economic system to their state-owned industries to their
child slave labor policies.
Millions of just uneducated peasants. Yeah, we want to be like them.
And the thing he wasn't playing. You know, well, you know, I mean, well, gosh darn it, we can always find some of those peasants who can run a 4440.
Especially if we outfit them with those Nike pieces.
Titanium belt buckles.
Just knock a half a second off that 40 time. You got it. Hey, have a nice Thanksgiving.
You too.
And make that personal as well.
It somehow stays personal these days, Reverbo. I can't seem to get otherwise.
So I hope you and your family are well and enjoy the holiday.
We are well, and we are going to enjoy our turkey, proudly produced by the People's Glorious Turkey Farm and Lead Smelting Operation of Hainan, China.
the Turkey Collector.
Yes. The Glorious People's Turkey Collective and Lead Smelter of Hainan, China. PROC.
Make sure you have a meat thermometer handy for that one. Yeah.
I don't know. We'll just start sniffing for the smell of molten lead, you know, at 525 degrees, I think, with, you know, you just skim it off the top of the drippings before you make the gravy.
It's too bad we don't have atomic power plants in everyone's backyard. You can make sure that turkey would come out okay.
And you know what? The Home Shopping Network would be one of these days they'll be selling little tabletop turkey irradiators with a very, you know, it's a very small plutonium core, safe for home use.
And if we clean up after ourselves, I'll be all for that.
Y'all come back now and clean up your mess, you hear?
Yeah. All right, man. Take it easy.
Later, Reverbo.
All right, bye.
Bye now. All right, you can't end a conversation like that without some kind of a bumper, and this one just begs for it. Not kidding. The horn is listener supported, and not trying to beat a dead horse or anything. Not even with a titanium belt buckle, I'm not. But it's the 23rd of November, and December is looking mighty damn grim. Need some help here. We're not even to $1,000 for the month. I know. But we are America's listener-supported liberal voice. We are the horn. You really just can't leave a song like that laying there when you've been beating a topic to death all night long like we have. From the Paul McCartney and Wings album, Venus and Mars, Magneto and Titanium Man, which is just so delightfully bubbly and upbeat. And yeah. Nice. We've had a caller on hold for a while here, and they gave up. Darn it. If you want to jump in the remaining moments of the program, which would be about, half hour or so, you are more than welcome to do so. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. And just a couple of here and there and hit and miss. I'm still kind of pissed at the idea of Dana Perino being on the what's it called, the Broadcasting Board of Governors. I don't care if this is a simply something to put on a resume, and they don't meet but once every 15 and a half years. Dana Perino has no business on it. What in God's name? What in God's name is the Obama administration thinking when they do that kind of thing? Don't they take into consideration what a slap in the face that is against everyone who basically held out at the barricades during those 8 long, tormented, tortured years and marched their asses off and walked and went door to door and were subjected to racial slurs and epithets during the electoral campaign trying to get Barack Obama into office? Don't they? Of course they don't. Because we aren't needed right now. Oh, we'll be needed in 6-7 months or so as we ramp up for the November general elections and the midterms. But we're not that necessary right now. We just aren't. And, as we talk about things like labor policies and shipping crap to China so they can ship crap back to us, only the thing is, the crap we ship to them isn't crap. We shipped our jobs. We shipped our livelihoods. We shipped our hopes and our dreams and our ambitions, our yearnings, the well-being of our children and grandchildren, our very future itself. And they ship crap back. A little something from a couple of days ago from a man that I am beginning to respect more and more. Not that I didn't respect him to begin with. My respect simply grows. Leo Girard, president of the Steelworkers. Headline, hell if D.C. didn't offshore $849 million in stimulus for windmills already. And it's one of those kick the furniture, son of a... And I got a feeling that's probably something similar to what Leo Girard said before he calmed down and started typing. Leo writes, it turns out a Texas windmill farm developer's request last month for nearly $500 million in stimulus funds to create 2,000 jobs in China doesn't rank first on the audacity scale. That's kind of a buried lead, isn't it? Last month, a Texas windmill farm developer asked for $500 million to create 2,000 jobs in China. He writes, though, shockingly for American taxpayers and sadly for the staggering 10.2% of Americans who are unemployed, it doesn't even come in second. That's because Washington already has doled out hundreds of millions in stimulus funds to foreign renewable energy firms. Of the $1.05 billion in clean energy grants awarded by D.C., $849 million of them, that's a whopping 84%, went to foreign wind companies. Those numbers come courtesy of Russ Choma of the Investigative Reporting Workshop, who wrote, the cash grants were given for the installation of 1,763 megawatts of capacity, 1,566 installed by foreign companies. Using the Renewable Energy Policy Project's own numbers, as many as 4,500 manufacturing jobs may have been created overseas. Yeah, really, that son of a dadgum. $4,500 jobs. That's the lifeblood of a community. Several communities, maybe. Leo Girard says a strong, broad Buy American clause in the stimulus bill could have prevented the offshoring of U.S. tax dollars intended to create jobs for unemployed Americans. He says my union, the United Steelworkers and the AFL-CIO, pushed hard for that language, and polls showed 86% of Americans supported it. What were Reverbo and I talking about a couple of minutes ago? Who gives a what you think? We're offshoring the jobs. Republicans and lobbyists for multinational corporations that wanted to spend U.S. tax money overseas opposed the Buy American provisions. I don't know what the official motto of the GOP is, but for the love of God, it ought to be, who gives a what you think? He notes Congress adopted weak, limited Buy American language. Now D.C. exports stimulus dollars to create jobs in foreign countries. Don't! Granted, some of the foreign wind firms that got stimulus funds have American subsidiaries, but most of them shipped major components for wind farms to the U.S. That means American stimulus dollars employed foreign workers. One Spanish company, Iberdrola S.A., got $545 million from U.S. taxpayers. And see, this... Oh, look, it's a make-it-personal moment. This is personal. You know, when I talk about what goes on here, and I say here, I mean Appalachia, I don't mean just the state of West Virginia. Politically, the state of West Virginia is a lost cause. Nothing, for most. Remember, we don't have Democrats and Republicans here. We have Colocrats and Colicans. But I'm talking about Appalachia, and that means a region that extends from Maine to Mississippi. What would 4,500 windmill manufacturing jobs mean in Iuka, Mississippi? What would they mean in Harlan County, Kentucky? What would they mean in Raleigh County, West Virginia? They would mean an opening door of freedom. Nothing less. And that is not by any sense of the word an exaggeration. Freedom. The freedom to renew the American dream itself. The reinvigoration of the middle class. The raising of some from the lower classes to the middle class. The ability to pay for college for kids. The tax monies that would go into the tax base that would fund clean water projects. Road building. School building. Increases in teacher salaries. And yes! Yes, 1,000 times yes. Healthcare. So to the same extent that I said, you know, what are they thinking when they put Dana Perineal on the Broadcasting Board of Governors? What are they thinking when this money that is supposed to stimulate the American economy winds up stimulating, and I love the Spanish, and I love Spain, and all, and I'm a Europeophile, or whatever the word is. But God Almighty, at some point in time, don't we have to take care of our own? Is there not a duty? Is there not an inherent obligation in the social contract embodied in the Constitution that we, because the Constitution, as the right-wingers are so fond of it, reminding us, only applies to Americans, and when it says promote the general welfare, it's talking about the general welfare of the American people. And when Congress is empowered to tax for the general welfare, it's for the American people. Not for Ivonderola S.A. Oh, yeah, I see the Sunday news shows, and I know that Siemens runs ads on This Week with Snuffleupagus's Meet the Whatever. And Siemens is a German company, and yes, they got subsidiaries in the U.S., but just as Reverbo talked about that battle of the billionaires, where is the American capital for rebuilding the American economy? This idea that we can subsist as a so-called new service economy is nothing but unmitigated horseshit. Everybody can't be white collar. And there is damned well a hell of a lot of honor in being blue collar. Blue collar is what I am. It's where I come from. It's a living earned by the sweat of the brow and the load on the back. And being blue collar does not foreclose the idea of being intelligent and being learned about things. Not at all. But somewhere along the way, there was some sort of snobbery involved that said we don't need to be blue collar anymore and we don't want to be. I know better. My God, I know better. And I just hope that Leo Gerard has a good blood pressure prescription, because that stuff's got to drive him crazier than a sprayed roach when he reads it. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. I want to thank Mike Malloy, first of all, because I never would have found your show if it wasn't for him and White Rose.
Well, thank you very much. Who have I got?
My name's Barry, and I live in New Hampshire. And I've been listening for quite a while now, a couple of months. I try to catch up. I rarely can get you during the live show, so I catch usually after midnight. I usually catch an hour or so afterwards, because I just, that's the way I am.
Right.
In the East Coast here. You know, I look at what's happening with the dynamics of government, what you said about the visions of FDR and, you know, what he had for vision. I don't see that happening with Obama. I don't know where he is. And it's troubling me, because I never, you know, I wasn't one of these people that was what some of the folks at Daily Coast call Obama bots. I'm not one of those.
No.
But I was a strong supporter of his. And I looked at him and I said, yeah, this guy's got his act together. He knows what he's doing. He's intelligent. He's a constitutional scholar. He's going to look at the rule of law as being paramount and understand the dynamics of, you know, the Constitution and how it needs to be applied today to handle corporations, multinationals and stuff. He's not doing it. And I don't understand that. I just don't understand it. The solution is in his, you know, the solution to change who we are and the way we live is in his grasp as a leader. And he's not leading that way. He's not asking us to change. he's the candidate of change, and he got into office, and we're not changing anything. What he should have done day one when he came in, he said, we're going to change the way we look at energy. We're going to stop poisoning ourselves with coal, okay? Mm-hmm. And so few people realize that coal kills not just people in your community in West Virginia and Ohio and Pennsylvania. It kills people in New Hampshire. It
sure.
kills people in Maine and Massachusetts because we breathe the crap that's burned.
It's burned in your backyard.
It is, and it's burned here, too, of course. But, you know, it acid rain affects our vegetation here. It gives people heart attacks. It gives people lung disease. It poisons, mercury poisons every damn fish everywhere on the planet. So he could have stepped up to the plate day one and said, here's what I'm going to do. And, you know, maybe I've had this idea for a while, and I don't know how good it is. Have the federal government issue energy bonds and do it in such a way so that they loan the money to consumers and small businessmen. The reason why people aren't adopting alternative energy as individuals, I can't afford to do it. I can't afford the upfront cost.
No.
And you can give me as many tax breaks as you want, and I still can't afford the upfront cost. So I sit here and I burn oil to heat my house. I'm on the grid. Sure, I've changed the CFL. Sure, I'm tightening up my house as best as I can, but it's a losing battle. If the government would come to me and said, tell you what we're going to do. You have an energy budget. You have to shell out X number of dollars every month to heat your home or to provide electricity. We're going to make a loan available to you, and it's going to be approximately that same amount of money. And you're going to take that money. We're going to loan you up front the cost it takes to buy the stuff you need to do to get off the grid. And if you want to get off 30% or 50% or 70% or 100%, we'll give you the money to do it. And we'll give you the money to change the way your house is laid out, maybe put in some passive solar, maybe put in some wind, maybe if you're in a place where you can drill for geothermal, get some geothermal happening. This is the type of stuff the government could do. We would get the rich people in this country very interested in alternative energy right away. They'd say, oh, I'm going to invest in these companies because, hey, there's money there. And it would cut our imports of oil. It would cut our imports of gas. It would cut our use of coal. I don't understand why this isn't happening. We have...
Well, can we just sort of time travel for a moment, Barry?
Sure.
Let's go back to the Carter administration. You may or may not be familiar with the speech that Carter... You know, Carter gave a speech about energy that was every bit as important as Eisenhower's warnings about the military-industrial congressional complex.
Right. We're standing in front of the fireplace with the sweater on, the people balked and made fun of him.
Right.
He was a dreamer, and he didn't know what he was talking about.
Well, once upon a time, there were proposals for a lot of the stuff that you're talking about, and some of them actually happened during the Carter administration.
Yep.
Through, and God knows they are a creepy bunch any way you slice it now, but through the TVA, there were incentive plans and loan plans out there that would pay for weatherization, that would pay for insulation, that would pay for, reduced electrical consumption. And a lot of individual power plants do that sort of thing, or power companies do that sort of thing, but they don't do it on the scale, and it's a question of scale. They don't do it on the scale or the scope of what you're talking about. And I agree with you 100% that is a legitimate use of government.
Absolutely. The government, it's a loan. The government takes the money back. It helps the country.
It was good for GM now, wasn't it?
Of course it was. And it helps the country in a number of ways. It makes the national security of the nation better because you have merchants and you have individuals that are off the grid, at least partially. God forbid you have a blackout. I mean, we have those up here in New Hampshire all the time. I happen to have a gasoline-run generator, so I can power that up. But I can continue to live in my home. At work, we have to have gas generators here, but we're crippled. We can't open the store. You know, we can power the necessary parts of the commerce part to answer one phone and maybe run a computer or two. But there's no excuse for, you know, not looking at this as a national security issue. Because it is a national security issue. When you have 30,000 people a year dying from just the effects of coal dust alone in this country. that, you know, it don't get reported. Nobody talks about that. We complain about, you know, the cost of energy, and yet we don't pay anywhere near as much as what the real cost of that energy is. You look at Europe, they've at least, they're not paying the full cost either, but at least they understand a little bit what it costs, so they pay a lot more in taxes. I don't expect this country to jack the gasoline tax up $3-4 a gallon. There's no way to do it. You'd strangle the economy.
Yeah.
And you know, poor people would suffer, you know, obviously.
But we could at least be a little bit honest about it and include the Pentagon budget in the true cost of our petroleum consumption.
Oh yeah, well, when you get, what are we paying? $4,000 a gallon for gasoline in Afghanistan, or
yeah,
something like that?
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Okay. It's crazy.
And you know, that's the private sector hard at work.
Yeah, well, they're of course they're going to be hard at work because they smell dollars. This is where the president could actually step up and be a nexus of change, of leadership, and he's not done it. I don't understand that, because that was the whole shtick. That was the whole thing. Hey, I'm the agent of change. Well, I don't see it.
Well, on the deep down low, I am told that the priorities of the Obama administration are, you know, we're going to get health care done, and then we're going to start on energy.
Yeah.
And I got to tell you, Barry, I'm suspicious.
I'm a little bit suspicious too. I mean, I'd even say that no, you don't reinstall the 55 mile an hour speed limit, but you sure can recommend it. And I don't see anything from the Obama administration telling people try to use less gasoline, try to turn down the thermostat. You know, I see very little of that dynamic coming out of there. It's very troubling. I don't expect them to stand in front of the fireplace like Jimmy Carter did with a sweater on and throw the solar panels back up on the roof of the White House, although I understand they're talking about doing that, too. That's not real. That's not the leadership that's needed. What's needed is a program and a national program. You know, there are individual communities that have done this, too. You have Berkeley, California, which has a loan program. And they've put that into place. And a lot of people have taken advantage of that. They've installed solar panels. They've installed solar passive hot water heating and solar house heating passively and saved money that way. And then, you know, Berkeley, they issued a loan and it gets paid back. So it's not a government expense. All it is you're feeding forward the cost. So these are energy bonds and people could actually invest in it. It could be an investment vehicle as well as a vehicle to drive manufacturing.
Yes, and the fact of the matter is, you know, governmentally speaking, whether it's a war on poverty or a war on cancer or a war on drugs, we're all fond of having war on stuff. What's wrong with a war on energy dependence? And why not get in earnest about it and sell war bonds? And there's the bonds that you're talking about.
Energy bonds, national energy bonds. You could have a war on energy waste. You know, they got kids, they talk about this. But driving in the highway, you can see how people drive. They haven't changed. They've gotten worse. They tailgate. They zoom around to get to your next stoplight ahead of you. They look at you. And I look at them and I go, why? What's the big
And they're doing it in vehicles that get 8 miles a gallon.
Yes. Still. And it is frustrating. It's confusing. I think of all the wasted plant material that sits and rots every year, turns into methane and CO2 that we could be converting into alcohol and biodiesel instead and at least getting some use out of it before it's turned into CO2 and methane. And, you know, we're not doing it.
There are little tiny policy things, and I'm not entirely sure if they're federal or state, maybe a combination of both. But for instance, If I took everything we have here off the grid, and I worked with wind and solar and passive and geothermal and all of that, and I was producing more energy here than what we used, which is entirely possible for a lot of households all around the country, and it's not limited to sunny places either. But if I was doing that, there's a problem, and that is that the tariffs for most power companies are such that if you generate electricity, they are required to technically take it from you. But what will happen is if you, I mean, and it's physical and it's tangible, you can go out to your meter and you can watch it turn backwards.
Absolutely.
Okay? But, and here's the hitch, it only turns backwards to zero. You are never allowed to get into positive money with the power company. The most you can ever hope for is to have a wash with them. And there is no requirement that they buy energy from you in excess of what they are providing to you, if that makes sense.
That's West Virginia you're talking about?
It's most states in the union.
Okay, New Hampshire, they actually have net metering, which means that if you actually produce more energy than you use, they will pay you. It's not a very good rate, but, you know, you still get some money for it.
But most places, you can't have more than a wash. The other thing, and this is, you know, I'm so leery of hydrocarbons, and I'm so tired of the 19th century hydrocarbon model that it's kind of hard for me to stomach. But the fact of the matter is, the best way to get coal out of this process, and understanding that we're talking about devils of comparative degrees of devilishness, I suppose, is natural gas, and we have tremendous reserves of it, and there are different ways of dealing with the waste products. Such that it can be recovered much more cleanly than any coal can. And, again, it's one of those regulatory fixes that would be relatively simple. The only reason companies prefer to burn coal is that it is given preference administratively in terms of how it's purchased over natural gas. You fix that, natural gas usage rises, coal usage diminishes, And a lot of things start clearing up fairly quickly. It's not necessary to blow up mountains anymore. And the market itself begins to take care of the problem.
Yeah, it's a combination of a whole bunch of things that could be happening, and they're not happening fast enough, and they didn't need to wait for health care. So I don't understand where Obama's going. I don't understand why he's waiting.
Well, you know, it's the walk and chew gum problem all over again, isn't it?
No, I don't think it is. I think he's, you know, I don't know. He comes from a state where he had pretty tight ties to Exelon.
Yeah.
Politics is part of it.
Lots of coal in Illinois, too.
Lots of coal in Illinois, lots of, you know, energy of different types in every state. That, you know, you have all these different politicians that are getting affected by lobbyists. It goes back to the lobbyists, and it goes back to political influence of corporations mixing with government. You know, that we never had a separation. We had a separation of church and state, theoretically. We need a separation of corporation and government is what we need.
Here, here.
Because they're destroying this planet. It's not just this country. We're on the verge of destroying the planet. We're just about there.
Going at it hammer and tongs. Barry, I hate to cut it short, but we are at the end. I hope you will call in again. I enjoyed our conversation.
I'll call back.
Okay, good deal. Well, take care. Thanks for calling.
Good talking to you.
Oh, it's a real pleasure.
Take care.
Bye now. Bye. From New Hampshire, that's Barry. Love hearing from first-time callers. You can be one, too, you know, anytime you feel like it. And that's the program for tonight, our Moran Monday. We didn't even get to all our Morans. But that's okay. They'll make more. Ooh. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for getting the week started, although it's going to be a shortened week. Remember, we'll go up through Wednesday and then nothing Thursday, nothing Friday. So, you know, got to get it all in the next two shows. Thanks to John Fox, Peter Godbold, Ben Birch. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. This is some of that change that we were just talking about. And Coal River is doing everything in its power to bring that change about. I will reiterate that it is grim. It is a grim November thus far. We need your help. If this is to continue, PayPal or snail mail, either one will be fine. If you can, please do. We'll be back tomorrow evening. And always, always, always. Gina, it's all for you.
Cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! The weekend is mercifully over, and a holiday week is upon us. This will be, of course, a shortened week. I mean, I try to get behind the microphone whenever I can, but we will not be here Thursday or Friday, as we will be observing the Thanksgiving holiday. But we will make a point of trying to observe it in such a way that I let the kids know, among other things, that, you know, what the real history of Thanksgiving is. And by the way, for later, but for later, if you wish, I really have to recommend to you a little something over at Crooks and Liars. You know Crooks and Liars, just like it sounds. Scroll down, it's fairly near the top right now. Scroll down until you find Kids Reenact the First Thanksgiving. It's charming. I mean, really charming. And much closer to any kind of truth than I would say most of the kids of the age of those in this particular video will ever learn way up into their adulthood about the realities of the conquest of this continent. Conquest? Conquest? Theft. Come on. Conquest, it makes it sound like there was some... No, theft. It's too video for the audio to be much good. But really, you do owe it to yourself. It is precious past precious. So have a run over to crooksandliars.com and check out Kids Reenact the First Thanksgiving. Yeah.
So even though it's a foreshortened week, or is it foreshortened? No, it's just a shortened week. And to foreshorten it would be mean that I wasn't here right now, but I am. Even though it's a shortened week, we've got 3 days of great conversation coming up. And I think we're going to have just a Jim Dandy good time this evening because it's the first day of the week. And, well, things just develop this way, don't they? And that means it...
Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up. You will not believe your eyes. No one will be admitted to the tent after the first 5 minutes. It is Moran Monday. Morans, Morans, Morans. Morans all over the place. More Morans than you knew actually existed and gathered together under one roof. Come and see the Morans. Come and see the right-wing teabaggers.
Yeah, it's Moran Monday. Wow, did I mail that intro in or what? No, not really. I mean, it doesn't deserve anything better. Because these freaks don't deserve anything better. Yeah, I've had an email correspondence going on with Reverbo over the weekend where we've been enjoying Gary Larson cartoons past. And as Reverbo noted, no one quite painted the Moran. Okay, so he didn't paint. No one quite drew the Moran like Gary Larson did. And you know, just go look for Gary Larson stuff. You'll find the Morans and you'll know when you see them. Because they're unmistakable. You know what I mean? Yeah. But it is Moran Monday, and we have lots of Morans on the agenda for you. But I want to start, and please, everybody, okay, those of you who hate sports, don't go, oh no, he's talking about sports, that's not liberal enough, now I have to leave. No, stay put, please. Because the head table of the Morans is usually reserved for right-wing mouth breathers and knuckle walkers and freaks of all form who come from the political arena. That's usually who's at the head table on Moran Monday. Not this time, however. Not this time. No, this time. You remember a few weeks back when. Oh, what was it? Bob Greasy said that Juan Pablo Montoya, the Colombian race driver, was out getting a taco or something instead of being at a press conference or something, you know, talking to important people like him. That was pretty stupid. It wasn't racist, it was bigoted. But never mind, that may be a distinction without a difference. I've got some fresh Moran for you, though, from the sporting world. And, of course, it comes from Fox. Over on cable, there's something called the Fox Sports Prime Ticket. And it's a cable network. And they control the announcers for various and sundry NBA franchises, including, but one supposes not limited to, the Los Angeles Clippers. Have you seen this one? This is just precious. The announcer for the Los Angeles Clippers is Ralph Lawler, and the analyst, otherwise known as the color guy, who works alongside him, is a person by the name of Michael Smith. They recently were doing their shtick, covering a game. It was the Los Angeles Clippers versus, oh, goodness me, where are they? Well, it doesn't much matter. It was a Clippers game. You know how that goes. I mean, there are long-suffering losing franchises out there, and the paradigm has been long since been the Clippers. I mean, they've had their little flashes, but yeah, come on, it's the Clippers. I mean, the empty seats. Oh, the empty seats. I'm sure that these guys could be heard across the court doing their little the broadcast pattern. But anyway, there is playing in the NBA a man by the name the Memphis Grizzlies is who they were playing. Went right by it. Memphis Grizzlies player by the name of Hamed Haddadi.